B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Let the party begin!
The show starts now.
We let him off the hook!
Not sure it's a party atmosphere here today. That's for certain if I'm reading the moods of my co-workers correctly. It is the John Kincaid Show here at 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Bob Cooney, filling in for John Kincaid along with Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Coach Eric Camille, a despondent Connor Thomas, and Heavy Chevy Mike doing our YouTube stuff. But a tough day. Tough day. We're talking about maybe one of the worst losses we've seen in Philly sports in a while. The emotions are running high here. And usually when stuff like this happens with the 76ers, all arrows point to two people. And it's either Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons. And today, if you want to point those arrows at either one of them, nobody's going to fault you at all. We'll start with Joel Embiid. I don't know what was going on with him last night. I don't know if the injury's worse than we know. He certainly was telling us, without words, on the floor, that his body wasn't responding the way he wanted it to. But when he's asked about it, he just says, I have to be better. Doc Rivers didn't have an explanation because he said that Joel Embiid went into the locker room and he didn't know why he went back there after the game. So they won't tell us exactly what the problem is, but Joel Embiid's play certainly told us that something was wrong. How do you possibly explain what Joel Embiid was doing in the second half? It appeared to me he was moving okay. Once he got the ball, he was moving okay. When he wasn't flailing on the floor and not getting back defensively, he was moving okay. He didn't seem hurt enough to play that poorly, right? You had a layup to tie the game late. And you didn't do it. A layup. And he doesn't do it. I don't understand what was going on with him last night. I couldn't read what he was doing. I don't know. I have more questions than I have answers today. Sometimes Joel Embiid is one of the hardest athletes to understand that I've ever seen in this city. And I am not denying that he had an MVP year at all. But do you have an MVP type of season and throw up a second half like that? I just don't get it. We're here. We have to try to figure out some answers, but I don't know if we're going to up until 10 a.m. Jamie, it's funny. You walk in. We have Pat walking in. Connor walks in. The moods are just, it's almost funeral-like in here. What was your thoughts on Embiid specifically last night and mostly in that second half after a very good first half?
Yeah, that was one of the worst performances I've ever seen from him. I think the obvious answer we all looked to was him being maybe more injured than we know, because that's the only thing that justifies it. He went 0 for 12 in the second half, and the last shot he missed, I still can't. It's been replaying in a loop in my mind.
And it would have put him up one. I'm sorry, would have put him up one.
He makes that, even if hurt, 99 out of 100 times. It was a bunny. And then Ben Simmons misses the rebound right behind it, and it was just like a comedy of errors. I mean, he had that, the 0 for 12 in the second half is the longest 0 for shooting performance in the NBA in the last 25 years, regular season or postseason. That's how historically bad that was. And that's not him, and it cost you the game. There's many other things. We all have our observations we'll get into from last night. I didn't think Doc was great. I didn't think Ben was great. I didn't think a lot of guys were great outside of Seth Curry. And you still should have won the game. The Hawks shot 36% and tried to give you that game. And we'll get into all this today, but it's you woke up with a bad taste in your mouth yet again this morning.
I just feel like because we're opening with Embiid, maybe it's the biggest problem. We'll talk about it. 610-632-0975.
25 years.
And I said to you, when you told me that stat not 2 minutes before we went on air, I said to you, and he might be in second place on that because he went 0 for 11 against Toronto one time in a regular season game. By accident, at 7 feet on a basketball court, you're making one of 12 shots by accident. And that layup, look, I've said to you guys before, I think he needs to get a power game to make him a complete player. I think his power game has to get better. There were so many times last night, whether it was pump fakes, drives to the basket, he needed a power move. And instead, he went to the dip the shoulders, put the ball down to your waist, and throw it up and flail in hopes of getting a foul shot instead of going through people. That was a classic case last night. Pat, is he number one on your list of complaints today, Joel Embiid?
Yeah, probably. A long list. How can he not be? It was the first time I've ever actually thought, and I'll say it out loud, he was a liability.
Offensively.
He was grabbing
offensively. Offensively, yeah.
I'm only talking offensively.
They got grabbed 21 rebounds, but
totally.
Offensively, he was an absolute liability last night. And that last layup, dude, just jam it home, please. Like, why are we trying to do finesse layups? You couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat last night, and you're trying to do this finesse layup BS, which, to Jamie's point, I still can't figure out how it didn't go in. So if you're having trouble actually putting the ball in the hoop, please just jam it home. You're 7 foot.
I don't even know if he hit iron on it. No, it didn't. He went up on the left side of the basket, and the ball came off on the right. I don't think
he hit iron.
I don't think he hit iron either. His game can be so frustrating because of the heights that he's taken of us, of what we expect from him as far as goodness. And in the first half, I mean, he's hitting fadeaway jumpers. He's moving well. He seemed fine.
Yeah.
Right? He goes into the locker room, and the reporting on that was
horrible.
Yeah, they didn't even notice,
and my spidey senses went off. Yeah, he's a guy playing with a torn knee, and he walked to the locker room. I hope your spidey senses went off.
And your general manager jumped out of his seat and followed him in there.
Yeah, of course.
So he comes back out. He's got this look on his face of a kid that just got his lunch stolen. And you're wondering, oh, man, where is he? I think it all popped into our heads, right? Where's Joel? Because if Joel's out mentally, physically, we know that follows.
Yeah.
And when he came walking back from the locker room, that was one of the first thoughts in my mind, like, oh, no. If he's starting to doubt his body, then usually bad play follows. But he didn't leave a huge mark in my mind at halftime when the Sixers were up.
They were up 13.
Yeah, that he was, something was wrong there.
No.
And so I didn't expect much of anything. They come out in the third quarter and just get blitzed, and their offense goes nowhere. They get outscored in the second half by 54-38. This is becoming a concern
38.
Now.
Jeez.
Yeah, you scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. Like, what? I don't get it. I don't know where all the fingers, if we have enough fingers to point out where to go of what went wrong last night. But certainly, I think Joel Embiid is probably at the top of the list. And that's why I start with him. I mean, when things go bad, right, James? When things go bad, you have to point to the stars.
Yeah, I mean, you have max players, one of which was getting pulled off the court in the final 3 minutes of the game. Another, and Tobias Harris, looked like he didn't want anything to do with a shot late. And then you had Joel Embiid, who historically just put up one of the worst performances in the last 25 years in the second half. So... All that max money you spent last night pretty much blew up in your face.
I literally sat, and it's interesting watching all of our reaction today. I literally sat there last night with other people in my house screaming at the TV, at different TVs, like down the hallway. Somebody was watching it there, and I'm sitting in the living room watching it. And I kind of sat there with a smirk on my face as if to be like, I can't believe this is happening, but I'm not going to let it get me upset. I don't know why it should have, and I was ticked.
I think it was an outlier, so you try to not take that as serious. Or there's the fear that he's hurt worse than he was at the start of the game, and maybe that explains why the big man was so bad.
Now, I don't think I dreamt. Did somebody hear that they were attending to his back also? Did you guys hear that?
They alluded to that on the broadcast because he was laying down on the floor before he went in. And I saw a couple people on Twitter saying, like, oh, maybe it's his back again, maybe it's his back.
And then in the post game, they asked if it was knee and if he can ever be 100%, and Joel Embiid kind of, you know, said whatever he said about what's going on there. But Clint Capella had an interesting take, and when it came to Joel Embiid, and when he was asked about it, I don't know if he was throwing some arrows towards the Sixers saying, yeah, we're not going away, but here's what he had to say about Joel Embiid.
Definitely by making his job tougher, contesting everything, making him work, And yeah, I saw that whenever you wear him out, it's everything becomes tougher for him. So that's how I know. Like, I knew it was a long series, and when the fatigue comes in, it's a different ballgame.
Wear him out, fatigue. Is this a song that we hear over? It's like a top 40 song that we hear all over, over, over again. Joel Embiid, health, fatigue, tired. Health, fatigue, tired. I mean, he had a great season. You were supposed to deliver him to these playoffs where health, fatigue, tired wasn't going to be part of the conversation. He tears the meniscus. Understandable. But here we are again, Jane.
First, Clint Capella is a minus 45 in this series. Shut the hell up.
He got under your skin.
I hope it gets under Joel's skin.
Yeah.
If I'm Doc, I'm saying, hey, Joel, come into my office today. I just want to make sure you heard what the guy you're going up against said about you last night. We know you're hurting. It doesn't matter. This guy's a minus 45. Shut the hell up, Clint. Second.
First of all, he's a nobody.
Second of all, the guy's hurt. He's clearly hurt. Like, whether it's something he's trying to play through, and that's great. But, like, to go fatigue when the guy's playing with a torn knee and that last layup, like, he didn't look right. His jumpers were all short tonight, which means his legs aren't under him. He's hurt. He's got a torn ligament in his knee that he's playing through. For Capella to go fatigue, I thought was pretty damn lame.
Yeah. Pat, what'd you think?
Same. I mean, I think the problem is if you say, oh, yeah, well, we know Joel Embiid is injured, then you're giving him an excuse. If you say it's fatigue, then you're criticizing the player. So I think that's where he went. But, this is a, oh, by the way, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? Like, to act like it's fatigue, he went to the locker room, he came back, he wasn't the same player. It doesn't take, Sherlock Holmes here to figure out. It wasn't fatigue. He didn't suddenly just get zapped of all of his energy. Something was going on with him physically that didn't allow him to get any lift. He had, what, two or three air balls in the second half?
Yeah, and he tried a three, which really, he was open for it. But instead of just taking it, he decides to pump fake and try to lean in at an important time of the game and winds up shooting an air ball three. Look, if you're battling something, you have to know how to play. It's part of being a great player. You have to know what's my best asset here. Okay, I can't be shooting threes. My legs are tired. I shouldn't be shooting jumpers. Maybe I should just post down low and play a power game.
They should have gone to that. You know, I even saw people complaining about the wide open layup. Like, why not feed him down low? He's not a great pick and roll player from that up top. And I was like, he had a wide open layup.
They ran a perfect play.
But to your point, why didn't they do a little more post play with him there if he was struggling? And to Pat's point earlier, I would have taken the ball out of his hands a little bit.
Yeah, he was becoming a liability offensively. I don't mind sticking to him.
No, me either, because you figure he's going to get hot at some point.
You figure he's going to do something.
But at some point, Tobias needed, because you know it's not going to come from Ben. I thought Tobias kind of needed to step up and be a Robin.
Yeah.
And there was no Robin to our injured Batman last night.
Yeah. Well, this segment's brought to you by T-Force Freight. Dock workers, join the T-Force Freight team that's respected everywhere. Dock workers in Stowe earn up to $26 per hour. Apply now at upsjobs.com. upsjobs.com. The mood's in here today. I wonder if you're feeling the same thing. So I see Coach here first. And the expletives that poured out of his mouth. Coach, don't wheel away from me. I want to see you while I talk about this. He's trying to hide from me. He was just unbelievably ticked off this morning. Pat comes in. Pat wears his heart on his sleeves. Connor's always smiling and happy. He's done today. Is this what a loss does to us here? Did this loss just totally drain the energy out of us for this series, or is it just a one-day thing, James?
No, I think it's just a one-day thing. I mean, that sucked. That's a game. It reminded me of the Game 4 Toronto series where you had a chance to step on their throats and put them out of their misery, and you didn't, and it ended up biting you. Now, I don't think Atlanta's going to go on to win the NBA title, but you had a chance to seize control and end them last night, and you let it slip away. The Hawks weren't good.
No, they were really bad. Their starters shot under 40% for the game.
36%, I believe.
As a team, yeah.
Yeah. And
we let them off the hook.
Yeah, like, you soiled yourself more than you let the Hawks beat you. So that's why it's an awful taste in your mouth.
I agree with that. I think the Sixers lost the game more than the Hawks won it.
Absolutely.
And that's what's so frustrating today.
And Danny Green was probably missed.
Yeah, probably more so than we know.
Yeah.
That's where the ire of one of us went today was to Furkan Korkmaz that he didn't.
Wait, why'd you get away from Seth Curry in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, I don't know, and that's a point we're going to talk about later. He sat on the bench a little bit longer than we thought.
Trying to create a three off the dribble in the fourth quarter with under 4 minutes to go.
Now he hits you a big three with two-something to go. Yeah. Huge
three.
But
he was open.
Yeah.
It was a kick out.
Yeah.
But he's creating off the dribble. Like, dude, who do you think you are?
There's just so many things that went on last night that we have to dive into that it was crazy. Now, I started out by talking about Joel Embiid, but as I said, when arrows get pointed towards failure with this team, it usually goes two ways. Jamie, you have the other one here going towards Ben Simmons a little bit?
Well, his stat line for the second half was 2, 3, and 1. 2 points.
2 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist?
I believe so, yeah.
Guess how many shots he took in the second half? Took.
2. 1. 1.
He was 0-for-1 in the second half last night.
I don't know what to say. I mean, he had to get pulled off the court in the final possessions. 1 because of the free throw shooting. His percentage somehow went down again.
He was 1-for-5.
So he's probably around a 30% free throw shooter these playoffs.
Yeah.
Did you guys see his quote after the game?
That's unbelievable.
His quote?
About how, yeah, I probably should have been more aggressive.
I'm tired of that, too. I'm tired of that song.
You think?
These two narratives of I have to be more aggressive and I'm just fighting through it and I'm here. Look, I'm not the reactionary guy where all this series, they can't win a title because of the way they played last night. But, man, it's the same old story too many times with these guys.
It felt like I was watching a game from last year. That's what the second half felt like.
Yeah.
It felt like a Brett Brown era tough loss in a big spot.
And what do you want them to do more of? So I thought you had a really good point here about I'm jumping ahead on you here. I'm sorry.
Oh wow.
But jeez. Yeah. But Ben Simmons, when you need more from somebody, don't you think it goes to your best ball handler creating?
Yes.
Did we see any of that in the second half last night?
No, it doesn't feel like it.
I don't think Ben Simmons is a 18-point-a-night scorer or anything like that. He's just not. And maybe people want him to be that. I understand it. And he frustrates the hell out of me with his lack of shot selection, too.
Because he could be.
He could be. But at least create for your teammates when you're not that. He didn't dribble penetrate. Pat just said it. He said, I wasn't aggressive enough. Well, why does somebody have to tell you to be more aggressive? He said in game three, Joel Embiid went to him at halftime after he had 4 points in the first half. He went to him and said, Ben, you need to be more aggressive. And he scored 8 points in the third quarter. Well, why does somebody have to tell you that? You're supposed to be a star in this league.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why they got away from what they did in the first half. I thought they were excellent. Despite some blown opportunities in the first half. But a lot of that was Ben Simmons getting the mismatches one-on-one and getting the points around the bucket. And, like, to get away from everything you were... And getting Seth Curry involved from the... Everything that worked in the first half just disappeared in the second.
Yeah. I don't know why. And if it's Joel Embiid's injury or whatever it may be, so be it. But you got to work around that. B-Hawk in Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, B-Hawk?
Davey, it's been a long time since a long time.
How you been?
I've been phenomenal, brother. Just really, really, really well. I'm starting to get back, and I'm listening. I listen to you guys every day. We got the best fans. Listen, we have broken record like last year, ain't we?
Yeah, it felt like a last year game.
Say, what was the coach change for? What was all this for? Even though, what is all this for? If the NBA not wide open for us to get that to walk the broad street, this is the time. Everyone's revamping next year. Golden State's coming back. You don't know what LeBron's going to cook up. This is the time is now. Suck it up. It's like a little brother effect. We keep telling these dudes the same thing. $100 million ain't enough. We got 3 players with that max salary. What is it? I'm so frustrated. I don't even know what to say. I just want to get on. We all saying the same thing. We stomp on Atlanta. We go to the next series. You know, if it's not the time, do you agree? This is the time. It's wide open. We got a Suns team that might be there. This is the time is now. We don't got to see a LeBron. The East is right there. They're broken. Like, what pumps in your chest, man?
Thanks, B-Hawk. You're the best.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you. B-Hawk wraps it up totally. That there's so much to say, but you don't know where to start. You don't know where to finish. There's so many things that went on last night that were frustrating.
Yeah, and to his other point, if you look at the NBA right now, it is kind of wide open. This might be the time to strike. I mean, Brooklyn, Kyrie, and Harden are out this next game. Milwaukee doesn't send shivers down my spine. The Suns are playing great basketball, but, you know, they still have to make the finals. So it's like, it's wide open. This might be your opportunity. And yet again, it feels like we're living in a wash cycle of repeat.
So do you go big picture on this, Pat? You lose a bad game last night. The worst part for me is, if I was involved with the team, is I can't believe we got to get back on a flight and go to Atlanta again.
It's one of my first thoughts.
Yeah. So, but do you look at it long term, like, they can't win a championship. I saw on Twitter last night, and, you know, people, emotions were running. You can't win a championship if you're a team that's up and down like this. And there's a fair point to be made there. Do you look at it long term, or are you just ticked about last night?
Ticked about last night. I think that's a very reactionary take, that they can't win a championship because teams up and down like this. Look around the NBA. You know, I understand the Suns just swept Denver, but they did it without Jamal Murray. Every other series is pretty close. You know, it's 2-2. We're looking at a Bucks Nets series that just got knotted up at 2.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's key injuries there. Yeah. So I think that's way too reactionary. They've had two really bad games in this series, but I'm not worried they don't win this series.
No, I'm not
even worried that I was out last night. I had to DVR the game, and I watched the first half, and then I had to watch the second half on delay. As I'm driving home, I'm like, yeah, I really think they could win the NBA championship this year. The thought dawned on me. You know, then I got home, and about an hour later, I was cursing a lot. But yeah. Whatever. I'm not buried the lead. That's way too reactionary. They can't win like this. Look at every other team. They're pretty up and down at times.
Yeah.
The NBA.
It's different. And look, I've told you guys before, I don't care who they're playing. I want to see the Sixers performing at a high level all the time, because that's what championship teams usually do. These quarters that they've played in this series that they have looked horrendously bad, it's concerning, and we're going to break that down later. But Jamie's going to talk to us about, he's not real happy with the coach when we get back. John Kincaid Show here at 97.5 The Fanatic. Time here is 6:22.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
So the Atlanta Hawks have quickly become the team that nobody can stand. From Bogdanovich to Trae Young to Capella to the hate the faces of Herter, all of that. You guys are becoming my Atlanta Hawks.
I don't hate Herter. To
Jamie to Pat to Connor.
I want
the moods today are just horrible, guys. I don't like the negative energy here.
I'm fine.
It's bad. Pat, what are you shaking your head about?
Like, let me be miserable.
Why? What good does it do?
It's kind of like, and you wouldn't probably get this reference, honestly, but it's and Jamie would, when you're playing a video game, you're playing Call of Duty, you're playing Madden, someone comes in and goes, oh my God, why are you so mad? It's just a game. And it gets you even more annoyed. You sitting
here
whining about how we're, quote, miserable is getting me more pissed off.
Are you right?
At least I'm getting choked up here. I'm crying.
Don't cry.
It's real with me, damn it.
Basketball.
But I'll tell you what. We talk about hate the faces. And I was hoping this series wouldn't be competitive enough that we would get to that point. Because when you just blow a team out, they don't even have time for us as watchers to be hate the face people. But my God, James, Trae Young, he's really, really working. Even my last nerve, who's more of an even keel guy, he is. I just describe him as an ass on the court.
Say it.
No, I'll let you say it. I'm setting
say
you
it,
up.
You coward.
Say it.
Say it.
Say it with your chest.
It feels good. It feels good.
What? I can't stand him.
Let it rip.
No.
Shoot or shoot.
Trae Young plays with no honor.
Yeah, that's weird.
Why are you being Ben Simmons with this insult? Shoot.
I'm not being Ben.
There was a play last night where I wanted to take my shoe off that I wasn't wearing and throw it at the TV. The three-point high pick that they set, I think it was late in the third quarter, maybe early fourth, where there was a high pick and it was kind of jumbled on the switch.
Right.
And there was like two Sixers kind of with their backs to Trey. It was just kind of a mess. And he had no intention of shooting. But when he saw an opportunity to launch into them to draw three fouls, he jumped into them, chucked a shot up that I don't even think hit rim.
Because didn't hit the backboard.
Yeah, he had no intention of shooting it. And luckily, the refs didn't call it. But that was one of the more pathetic plays I've seen in the NBA in my life.
And you immediately tweeted out, he has no honor.
He plays with no honor.
I wish Joel Embiid played with no honor last night. I wish he was doing that.
So, with Trae Young last night, Pat, what was it more of a hate the face guy? Because his numbers last night, all right, this is really weird. His numbers last night, he goes off for 25 points on 8 of 26 shooting. That's a horrendous shooting night, 8 of 26, yeah. But also has 18 assists. Is he the key factor of winning that game last night?
No, I think it's, look, if I give you a box score and I just show you the box score, and you see 25 and, was it, 18 assists, and you're like, wow, that's a hell of a night. And
right.
I show you Joel Embiid's, which I think was 17 and 21, you're like, wow, he dominated. No, he wasn't the difference. It was the Sixers' inability to capitalize when they would get stops. It was Joel Embiid going 0 for the second half. It was Joel Embiid's inability to get to the line. Like, I was kind of bringing it up yesterday about the rip move being Trae Young's, you know, stop and draw a foul. He had no intention, it seemed like, of getting to the line. So I don't look at it like, and you said this earlier, I don't look at it like the Hawks necessarily won the game. It was the Sixers more lost the game than anything. And it wasn't one Hawk that really annoyed me.
I couldn't agree with you more. I really believe that. Of all the things that I was trying to look out of how the Sixers lost the game, not one time did I go, because Atlanta did this. It wasn't that they defended Joel Embiid any different or any better. It wasn't that Trae Young totally went off and you couldn't stop him. Although 25 and 18 or whatever it was, 18, 25 and 18, yeah, that's a pretty good night. Did Ben Simmons not do what he was supposed to do defensively against Trae Young?
Yeah, I'll answer for you, yes.
I mean, the results.
Yes. James, you can just say yes.
I didn't think you. I mean, Trae Young was plus 7 for the first time in the series. Him and Collins were plus players. It was the first time their starters were positive. So I guess not. But, like, his stat line doesn't make me think that he didn't. I mean, he shot 8 of 26 from the field.
Yeah, and the previous game, he had 28 points on 17 shots.
Yeah.
But he seemed ineffective because 17 shots isn't what Trae Young is all about. He wants to get 26 shots up, and they designed their offense for him to do that.
So I would say he did his job on defense.
Again, your answer is exactly what I think we're all believing is. It has nothing to do with Atlanta last night. It has everything to do with the Sixers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
he was Trae Young, 3 of 11 from deep.
Yeah. I mean, that's everything he did last night I thought was manageable. The assists, can you blame the guy covering him for his assists?
No.
I mean, if he's throwing the wide-open guys off a dribble penetration because he can't shoot.
And by the way, what the hell is up with that shoulder pack he had on?
Oh, my God. He looked, I haven't seen Curt Schilling. I haven't seen any pitcher in baseball. You know, guys that had shoulder problems. I've never seen any ice pack that big.
So my warped thought when I saw it was,
excuses are being made.
This will be the excuse that the national media makes of why the Hawks. This will be the storyline. Oh yeah, Trae Young, he struggled, but I'm like, that's poppycock. Get out of here with that crap.
Poppycock? Did you actually say that?
I didn't say that out loud. I said another word that the FCC will fine us for.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of that going around today.
I don't say that word because it's a slippery slope of a word.
Poppycock?
Yeah.
What do you mean it's a slippery slope?
You can slip up very easily there.
No, poppycock.
No, I'm just going to avoid that word.
Now that's...
You're going to avoid it altogether?
That's poppycock, Jamie.
Yeah.
You know what you're not going to avoid? Giving your wrath to Doc Rivers about last night's game.
I didn't get it. I'm not like capital offense, you know, frothing at the mouth mad, but I was left confused. Why was Seth Curry not in the game for what felt like the majority of the fourth quarter? He was your best player last night. And he didn't come back in until 4:30 remaining, maybe the 5 minute mark. And even when he did come back in, he was kind of silenced by Korkmaz. Like, it seemed like they were going, they were running an offense through Korkmaz and Embiid rather than Curry and Embiid or Curry and Simmons or Curry and Tobias.
Curry and anybody.
Curry and anybody. He just wasn't involved. I thought the rotations were just kind of weird. Yeah, I didn't get it. I was left scratching my head there at the end of the game. Like, why are they going this way? Maxey seemed to get, like, a lot of run kind of into that late third, early fourth. I didn't think it was really a spot for him last night. I probably thought there was a little too much Korkmaz down the end. I mean,
yeah.
I know he hit you a big three. Dwight Howard was, frankly, on a pretty good run there. And Joel Embiid was struggling like he's rarely struggled before. So I didn't feel the need to go away from Dwight there early in the fourth. Like, I thought he could have gone for another minute or two.
Yeah.
I just kind of was left scratching my head at Doc's rotations there in the fourth quarter.
Do you think it was as much, it had as much to do with he couldn't figure out who was doing what? Because you had Ben Simmons not being aggressive in the second half. You had Joel Embiid in the midst of an 0-for-12 second half. Tobias Harris kind of faded away again.
Kinda?
Is it?
He's on a milk carton in the fourth quarter.
Is it that Doc Rivers is trying to figure it out by doing anything necessary? Or was he part of that problem of what I just stated?
I think he was part of the problem. Maybe somebody needed to take control of the offense. I mean, what did they have in the fourth quarter? In the final 9 minutes, they had 6 points?
Yeah, 18 total for the fourth quarter.
And
when Curry came back in at the 6:05 mark.
6:05, okay, so it was, I think,
yeah,
five.
Yeah, no, and they were up 92-90. Like, the game got really, really close again.
Yeah, I mean, that few of points in the final minutes of a game is just inexcusable. And I think Doc had a part in it.
Pat, how much blame do you lay on the head coach?
A lot. I mean, he pooped the bed. Flat out. Like, that was, you know, you look at game one and there was the lapse there, you know, the end of the first, second. And Nate McMillan kind of had that when the Sixers got it to, like, 18. He kind of had a similar, like, mental lapse of, why isn't this guy calling a timeout? I can kind of accept that because you're expecting your starters to get out of it. I don't know what the hell he was doing. Not only having Furkan late, that last possession that the Sixers got bailed out on because of a John Collins turnover.
Oh, that was good defense.
But Furkan was on Trae Young.
Yeah, they got caught in a switch there.
What is Furkan doing on Trae Young?
That horrified me.
Well, it was actually a smart offensive play, obviously, where they got them to switch off, and we all said it. Everybody in the Delaware Valley looked and said, what the hell is Furkan Korkmaz doing on Trae Young late in a game like this? It wound up working out, but
why is he in that position? I mean, you know, I think the problem with this team a lot of times when Joel Embiid isn't going well, and it was obvious, and the broadcast kept bringing up the body language, which was so true. And Doc needs to pull Tobias and Ben to the side and be like, you guys need to take over. Because I feel like I understand they shouldn't need to, but you do. Unfortunately, you do with this team. And it seems like when Joel is out and they know he's going to be out, they're fine. When Joel isn't going well, they look lost because it's the situation of, do we keep giving him the ball? He's the best player to shoot himself. Last night, they needed to take over and they didn't. And I blame Doc Rivers' leadership of not getting these guys in check and being like, someone needs to take this game by the horns, because it was there to win and they just let them off the hook.
Yeah, at some point in the middle of third quarter or fourth quarter, it kind of came to my head like, Joel doesn't have it. Maybe you need to rest him a little bit and go do that sort of offense-defense type of thing where you bring Dwight Howard when there were stoppages, and you could get Dwight Howard in there for defensive purposes for a little bit and then sub back out. Maybe rest wasn't good for whatever was ailing Joel Embiid, but Doc didn't seem to have any answers. I think he was struggling, like you said, Pat. When you have your MVP candidate playing the way he did, you're on the fence of, do I try to get him to fight through it, or do I sub him out because he's so ineffective? I would lean towards letting him fight through it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd kind of be an insane person, I think, if you took him out in the final stages of a game. Pat said something interesting there. You know, pulled Ben and Joe aside. Tobias almost gets like
this. I meant Tobias. Did I say Joe?
You said pull Ben and Joe aside.
So my bad. I meant.
Well, no, but I think a lot of people would say that. Tobias, like, he's a max player too.
You think he gets a free skate?
Kinda. I mean, look, Ben Simmons, we know, has offensive liabilities to his game. Tobias has a mismatch on most people in this series, whether it's Solomon Hill, whether it's John Collins. John Collins is a solid defender, but sometimes Herter's been on him.
Yeah, yeah.
He should be able to score, not at will, but more often than not, if he gets a one-on-one matchup, and he just gets forgotten about kind of as this max player.
Yeah.
There's three of them, and Tobias needed to step up last night, in my opinion. He's probably number two on my list.
Wow. Well, Aaron and Darby, number one on his list, appears to be the point guard. Aaron, what's going on? You're on 97.5, The Fanatic.
This is Aaron Brown. I think the Sixers need to get rid of Ben Simmons, man. I think he don't need to be point guard no more. But ship the ball forward and shoot him out of shoes.
Look, it's hard. I don't think getting rid of Ben Simmons is the answer, but there's complaints to be made over his second half performance, right?
Yeah. And Doc Rivers, he did a bad coaching job last night, man. Why didn't he bring Dwight Howard in? How y'all?
Oh, I don't know what happened there.
We lost you to the Matrix.
Wasn't
there.
Me. Yeah. Doc. Everybody's up for complaints today.
Well, like back to the point just before we got to the call. Like, take any other team in the playoffs. Jokic is going off. Why did they get swept? Because they didn't have anybody else step up.
Yeah.
They lost Jamal Murray.
Right, big injury.
Aaron Gordon wasn't there. Every Batman needs a Robin. And our Batman didn't have it last night. And if you go to Phoenix, if Devin Booker doesn't have it, which is rare, Chris Paul will step up. Or maybe Bridges steps up. If you go to the Clippers, if Kawhi doesn't have it one night, Paul George can step up. Last night you needed Ben or Tobias to step up. And they were both MIA in the fourth quarter. That's what it boiled down to for me.
It seems like now the Milwaukee-Brooklyn series is different because you're dealing with injuries. Milwaukee did not play well the first two games, although Brooklyn certainly had a lot to do with it.
Middleton stepped up huge in game three.
Yeah, most teams are rolling now.
Drew hit a game winner in game three, even though he didn't have the best game.
Right.
They all have guys stepping up that aren't the primary player.
Yeah, last night the 76ers did not have that
at all.
They
didn't have that.
No.
And there's no excuse for it.
No, there's not. And it goes back to our narrative that Atlanta didn't win that game as much as the 76ers lost it.
Totally.
And that's what the frustrating thing is today. And that's what all the frustration that we're carrying around just directly leads to. 610-632-0975. There's so many things, so many ways that you can look at last night's game and point to and say, this was wrong, that was wrong. What are they? Let us know. 610-632-0975.
I just got some Atlanta nerd finding my Trae Young plays with no honor tweets, so this should be fun.
Oh, but, I just meet those people. Found out they have a basketball team 3 weeks ago.
This guy's verified. 42,000 followers. Philly is big mad. I'm sorry my point guard plays with honor. He may not shoot the ball, but at least he doesn't play with no honor. Trae Young's a coward.
Well, first of all, I'd like to address this person. What's his name?
Matt Chernoff.
Oh. That's one of the name droppers.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would just like to address Matt Chernoff and saying, yes, I am big mad.
I am very mad. But that doesn't mean the series is over.
So no,
let's, very mad. Let's relax down there.
Matt Chernoff's not wrong, Jamie. I'm very mad right now.
All right, let me do the devil's advocate real quick here. So
I say it half in jest, like 65% in jest, and humor sometimes on Twitter is lost.
And what gets on your nerves, what irritates you, Connor, most, and we were just talking about it during the break, is his trying to make contact when it's not there, running into people and drawing fouls. The point that you gave earlier where there was kind of a scrum in front of him and he tries to jump in and throw a ball up so he can get three shots. How does Atlanta, and maybe the rest of the NBA, view Joel Embiid? Here's a 7-foot, 280-pounder going into a lane, and instead of trying to go through people, he puts the ball on his hip, and he puts a shoulder down, and he throws the ball up with two hands, and he falls to the floor more than he goes to a power. When was the last time you saw him dunk over somebody? It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen very often, but I think before last night, they're saying, holy hell, that's the best player in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, but so it's one off night where the guy's playing through injury.
But I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, does Joel Embiid get on other teams' nerves as much as, say, Trae Young has gotten on Philly's nerves?
I don't see any sense of the same cheapness coming from.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's so good.
It's that, but it's also, we talked about this yesterday, it's the rip-through move that he does.
I don't see that as nearly as cheap.
Sixers fan, but if I was a Hawks fan, I'd hate it.
Basketball move.
Yeah, but Jamie, sometimes he does it, and you can clearly tell he's trying to draw a foul, and he's not actually trying to get shot up.
But it's a basketball move where he's crossing, stepping, and getting through something. It's an indefensible move if he pulls it off cleanly.
Look, I love Joe.
That's not a cheap move.
I think at times he's out there trying to win a Razzie Award with the bad acting.
We'll
agree to disagree.
Look, you're both trying to get an advantage. Embiid's trying to get to the line because he's a great
basketball play.
The referees are making what Trae Young does a basketball play because they're calling it.
He jumped into the back of a Sixers defender when
they didn't call it last night, and Trae Young clanked one off the backboard.
And Joel Embiid didn't do the rip move last night, and it probably cost them.
He did it earlier, and he got to the line.
They went to the line the same amount of times, Embiid and Young both ate.
Yeah, that's inexcusable for me.
It's kind of semantics, but I did find it interesting when Connor came in here, and he was just spewing
up. I'm sure they find him irritating. Yeah. He was telling the crowd to shut the bleep up last night.
Yeah, I can do without that.
But, I mean,
I love that, but then you have to back it up.
Yes.
Like, I love the energy of telling the crowd to shut the F up. Then you can't go 0 for 12. You need to come back in and dominate. You need to hit that layup that you probably should have just dunked.
So, Pat, one of your thoughts.
But if he doesn't have a leg, how can he dunk it?
It's a great point, Jamie, and I'm not a doctor. I'm just a radio guy.
Hey, I mean, come on. You're 7 feet.
Just make the layup. He makes it 99.9 out of 100 times.
Yeah.
Hard or not, you just make the layup. It's not hard.
Yeah, well, if he was in maybe better shape, you know how you can get in better shape? NJ Diet. NJ Diet contractually guarantees you lose 20 to 40-plus pounds in only 40 days. So get slimmer for summer. Call 855-5-NJ-DIET or njdiet.com.
That was smooth.
Pat, thanks.
That transition was good.
You got to get these things in when you can. Sometimes you don't get it in smoothly.
Is this the first time all season that we've questioned his being in shape?
It wasn't a shape thing.
I know it wasn't. I don't believe it was either. I think it was clearly the injury, but that was the narrative that they were running with. Is this the first time that it's creeped in your head all season?
Do you use more energy to try to play through an injury? I would say yeah. Right? Like, if you're on the ice, Pat, all right, here's an example, silly as it is, but you're on the ice, you have a little bit of a rib problem. You're probably using more energy to get through it while you're playing.
Well, I mean, Bobby, I'm a gamer.
Embiid, you know, with this injury, it probably takes more energy for him to try to battle through whatever's going on with him. So I don't think exhaustion is out of the question last night. He looked tired to me.
It does make sense to be overcompensating for something, for that, you know, trying to work harder, but...
But it's not he's out of shape, he's moping, and this and that. There's a reason why.
Yeah, he was gassed last night. I think we're all okay on that. And look,
but to Clint Capella's point, it's not like if he's worn down, it's because he's playing through an injury, not because he's like out of shape and fatigued.
But isn't that even more reason, though, that he should have gotten to the line, or at least made an attempt? Like, that's what really annoyed me. He just seemed to not even... do his normal Joel Embiid attempt to get to the line. It was more of, I'm going to try to do, you know, jump shots and three-pointers to try to get out of this. You know, one of Allen Iverson's, you know, probably his best attributes was the fact that he would come in hungover. I mean, and we know that now, but he would get to the line 15, 20 times.
Yeah.
No. So it's like, you got to know, okay, well, if I don't have the jump shot, but I know I can hit my free throws... Dude, you got to be doing the little Trae Young, Joel Embiid moves to get to the line.
I've always said when you're struggling offensively like Embiid was, you have to try to get to the line. He tried it on a three-pointer. He goes into the lane instead of going through people. He's kind of that finesse layup with 8 seconds to go. I don't know what he was trying to do there. I would have looked to have drawn the contact. You're down a point. You're an 85% free throw shooter.
Just make it. You're wide open and you're 7'2".
Yeah, just make it would have been a...
That's all he should have done, James?
I still can't believe at 6:51, after being awake for now nearly 3 hours now, that he missed that shot.
Yeah. And we're going to see it over and over and over again until tomorrow night.
Until they blow their doors off tomorrow
night. He just should have made it.
Probably.
Yeah, that would have been good.
We should probably put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Make the shot!
We could try.
Dash Jamie Lynch.
6 a.m. hours brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters. Bradford White is here for the pro. All right, we're talking about it. Where's your blame go today? 610-632-0975. A clunker of a game last night by the Sixers. And one of the reasons I don't think they won last night is something that you might be able to change pretty easily. The John Kincaid Show here, 97.5 The Fanatic, 652.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Well, that run to a championship pulled a hamstring last night, because that was ugly. It is the John Kincaid Show here on 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Bob Cooney. John is on vacation. We got Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Coach Camille. Not many people in very good moods around here today. Jamie had a statement as we walked to get coffee on break, which had me rolling on the floor laughing.
And I have a Hall of Famer in my corner.
Yes, you do.
I got to find video of that three-pointer where he just launched it, trying to launch him. Like, he had no intention to shoot and just jumped into a player and tried to let it rip. I have to find this video because, as I said to you as we were walking, it was offensive to the game of basketball.
He said that a play was offensive to the game of basketball.
I'm not even, like, being exaggerating with that one.
This is coming from, and I love you, Jamie, this is coming from a guy who loved the process.
I didn't say that wasn't offensive to the. That was a loophole in the league's stupid.
I'm with you. I'm just.
This wasn't a,
showing the two sides of a coin here.
We see. You can hear the emotion that's going and through this building today, and I'm sure all of you listening have it also.
Guess who has my back?
I want to fight you,
Steve Nash. He called him out in January for it.
You do have a Hall of Famer,
a two-time MVP on my side.
I am very proud of you.
Yeah, and Steve Nash. We see the same thing.
Yeah, but he's Canadian.
Jamie's playing the tough guy here on radio today.
There's no tough guy. He's coward.
He's calling
jumping
people
cowards,
saying they're making offensive
basketball
moves.
It's not why the Sixers lost, but he plays with no honor.
No, but one of the reasons they lost last night, and I'm convinced it's something that maybe you can get a little better, and that's toughness. Because toughness is a great trait to have during a playoff run. We see it everywhere, no matter the sport. Toughness comes with it. If you're a great team, toughness is right next to it. I'm convinced with the way all these playoff games are going, a little tweak could make the Sixers a lot tougher. We see the way refs are calling these games, and Jamie, it's part of your ire this morning about how Trae Young is drawing fouls in different ways like that.
It's a minor thing from last night, so I don't want to make it like a main point.
Sure,
but he's highly offensive to my eyeballs.
And the way refs are calling things, I don't know, and it's the way they're instructed. We can argue whether the refs are good or the refs are bad, but they're calling the games the way they call the games. So how do you combat it? In my opinion, there's way too much complaining, way too much bitching, way too much. Joel Embiid last night tried to draw a foul late on the floor while Atlanta went down the other end on a 5-on-4 and hit a wide open three. That can't happen. That's not toughness. To me, complaining constantly about non-calls not only isn't tough, it also is not going to get you more calls. And the name of the game is to get on the sides of the officials where it's going to benefit you. I really think a small tweak, if I'm Doc Rivers, guys, shut up. Shut up. Shut up with the referees. They're getting tired. You can see it in the refs' faces. We see it in every game, the amount of bitching that goes on by these NBA players, by these coaches. It's not doing you any good to get more fouls called in your favor. And I understand the decided advantage coach wants to try to get by getting in a referee's ear and saying that my guy's getting this and you're not calling that. The refs are hearing it too much now. I think they're going to respect, and you might even get more calls if you just play the game and play through tough. There was a play last night where Joel Embiid took two dribbles in the lane. Clint Capella flew off of him like he got hit by a Mack truck. I don't even think it was a foul. I mean, Joel Embiid was.
I remember the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Don't force the referees to make the play tougher. Force them to not make the calls because you're playing the tougher. The bitching isn't working.
The counter to that is Capella flopped on one where Embiid put his shoulder down. You know, like it goes both ways. But I do think the bitching to refs has gotten out of control.
It's totally way out of control. And
not just Sixers-centric. I think league-wide.
I'm not saying Sixers-centric at all.
It's bad.
Something has to change. When everything's a copycat league. Well, the copycat is now, let's complain about everything, put our hands up in the air. Why don't you be that different team? And if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm making a note. We're not going to complain about calls. Just call a good game and play a tougher game. Play a tough game. If a guy barely touches you, stand pat. Play a tough game that makes the officials force them to make the proper calls so that you know how you're playing the game. I don't think the Sixers were very tough last night, Jane.
No, they weren't. I mean, Embiid had a couple, you know, and look, he's probably injured and probably trying not to land with all the force of his body on his injured knee. But he was kind of, I don't want to say flopping, but going to the floor too easily last night.
Why can't you say flopping?
Yeah, say flopping.
Because I don't think he was flopping per se. I think he's concerned about his lower extremities. Like, I think when he comes down, I think his natural tendency right now is to kind of just fall. Like, I don't think it's a flop trying to draw a foul. I think it's a flop of, I need my body to collapse here. You know what I mean?
But 99 times out of 100, when he falls, his hands go up in the air. Like, where's the call? Where's the call?
He does bitch a lot.
Yeah.
But everybody bitches a lot.
I can't stand it anymore. I really can't.
It was a good game, but a bad product last night.
The NBA, it's really something that's caught my eye, especially during these playoffs, all the playoffs, not just the Sixers, that the amount of complaining that goes on is just ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. And look, as a coach, you're saying, let them play. Well, teach your team to play tougher. Teach them not to flop every time. Teach them not to jump into people's lanes as they're going. Teach them to play basketball the way it's supposed to be played. I understand trying to get an advantage in the way Trae Young does. I do. I can't fault him because he's getting called on cheap fouls because he's creating the contact.
I can fault him because the NBA is instilling a new rule next year to prevent this. It's so bad that they're actually making a new rule.
So I almost have to applaud him that he found...
Screw him.
Kidding me? But he found a way to make the game go to his advantage.
He found a loophole.
By cheating.
It's not cheating.
It's not cheating.
It's cheap.
It's cheap. I would say it's cheap, but
it's kind of like losing on purpose to get top picks.
Why are you comparing the process to this?
I mean, because you're so offended by it, and you're so offended by it, and
it's a stupid point. One was a philosophical way to build a team. The other is a cheap play on the court.
It's not cheap. It's a basketball play.
They're instilling a new rule next year to prevent exactly what he does.
And it's not. It's
stop comparing the process.
This postseason is not next year.
Stop comparing the
figure
process
out a way to stop
to something
it.
That's done on the court. Stop.
It's ridiculous. Like, you're whining so much about this game.
Oh, wow.
And Trae Young.
Dude, you're comparing something that's not comparable to a basketball play. They're apples and oranges. It makes no sense what you're saying.
See, this is the type of emotions that I was talking about that we're dealing with today.
Description you have of the Trae Young play, you could literally use as the process.
I don't
want
to talk about this all day because it's not why the Sixers lost. It's a minor thing that the NBA has recognized as a problem because he plays a cheap style of game.
Am I the only one who thought the refs actually did a really good job last night?
They didn't call the play that was most offensive, and kudos to them for that because it's an absolute dog crap play.
Like, the refs weren't even close to being the problem.
That's why we need to move
on
and complain about Doc Rivers.
All right, well, Elijah has a complaint, that's for sure. Elijah in South Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Can you feel the heat, Elijah?
I do, but I have to tell you guys something. This is not a championship team. I've been feeling this for a long time, and I'll tell you why. And some of you guys you are homers. And you got to understand, Embiid is not the best player in the league. One of the best. But, Bob, you'll probably know it's very hard for a center to be the best player in the league.
He's not a center from the 90s. He's a unicorn that plays the majority of his game from the outside and mid-range. It's a different position.
But playing from the outside and mid-range is a huge problem.
That's where the game's decided, though.
Most of the time, he's up. Exactly. And when the game is decided, if you look around the playoffs, who are the teams that are usually winning? Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell. You got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
That doesn't mean you can't win different ways, though, Elijah. I hear what you're saying.
He just needs one of those players to add to him.
Oh, well, I don't disagree with that.
He needs his Dwayne Wade or Kobe, but you can't get that without giving up these players on his team.
All right, Elijah, real quick, what are the changes they have to make?
Ben Simmons has to be one of them. Tobias has to be the number three player on the team, I believe. He is not in him. The way it's not in Ben Simmons, I don't think it's in Tobias. He forces it sometimes. He's hit game winners, but it's not in him every night. He's not a Donovan Mitchell. Just think of this, guys. I know we talk about Trae Young and how Ben is a great player. If they were swapped, how easy would a pick and roll between him and Embiid be?
Yeah, no, you're right, Elijah, and thanks for the call. Much appreciated. There are faults to Ben Simmons' game. I'm not ready to give up on him. Look, we were talking yesterday, and me specifically said that I thought they played almost a flawless game on Sunday night. Or not Sunday night, Friday night.
Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night.
Do you even know basketball?
I thought they played almost as well as they could play. I really found it hard to find fault. I think one of your topics yesterday, Jane, was this looks like a championship team to me.
And I still believe they can be, but it all depends on the status of Joel Embiid.
Yeah, this is the roller coaster to this NBA playoffs, right? I mean, Brooklyn goes, not discounting injury, but Brooklyn just absolutely rolls Milwaukee in those first two games. And the talk is, oh my God, Brooklyn is the NBA champion. Yeah. Forget about it. Now, Milwaukee makes a nice comeback in game three and cuts it to a 2-1 series lead. Then Kyrie, of course, gets hurt and all the ramifications of that. But that's the roller coaster that is the NBA playoffs. Right now, the Phoenix Suns are really the only team that is just sitting high. And
they're playing great basketball.
And they're rolling and playing great, great basketball and battled through an injury to Chris Paul to get where they are right now. Last night sucked. It was horrible. I don't know if we should take it long term.
No.
In the way Elijah was saying that you got to get rid of Ben Simmons. You need a better guy there because Tobias has to be number three. Look, stay in the moment. This is what you have now. This is your playoff run now. Let's stay in this moment.
I'm not talking about the team next year right now.
Right.
There's a game five to win at home in Philadelphia, which I think they will win because the Hawks did not play well last night, in my opinion. They shot 36% as a team. The Sixers gave that game away between a litany of Joel Embiid going 0-for-12.5, which is historic in the last 25 years in the NBA. Ben Simmons putting up a 3-1-2 second half stat line. Tobias Harris being on a milk carton in the fourth quarter. Doc's weird rotations. All of it. I mean, Shake Milton not taking a wide open three at the end. And I understand why you'd want to look for Curry there because the guy was hot and your best player all night. He regretted passing as soon as he passed it. He should have taken the shot. There's a litany of reasons why you lost that game last night, and it's not predict. I'm not basing next year's reaction on last night's game. They can still take control of this series Wednesday night. It's far from over. I still think the Sixers are probably going to win in six, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think their championship DNA has in any way been affected by one game last night.
No, I don't think so either. I think last night is overcomable, but it is concerning.
Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris taking zero shots in the fourth quarter.
Tobias didn't shoot either in the fourth quarter?
Not at all.
He disappeared.
I just looked it up. I mean, and Jamie's right. Like, I don't know what happened. He had 14 at the half, and he was looking good. And then all of a sudden, he disappeared. But you cannot have your number two and three. Like, the caller said, Tobias needs to be a three. Tobias is a three. Like, he's your third, quote-unquote, star on the team. You can't have your number two and number three guys not shooting in the fourth quarter in a close game that you need because we just have to feed the big man the ball when he's not hitting shots.
That's unfathomable. That stat that you just gave, that your big man's 0-for-12 in the second half, but that your second and third players, offensive threats, we have to call them that, whether you have Tobias Harris 2 and Simmons 3 or vice versa, didn't take a shot in the fourth quarter?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Tobias took two, Ben took none.
It's pathetic.
Okay. And he missed both.
It's horrible. So much blame to go around, and Reese has somebody else. Reese in West Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Good morning, fellas.
Hey, Reese.
Boy, I tell you, man. Man.
So what's your biggest gripe with Doc, Reese?
Doc, man, the rotation, man. I don't know what he was doing.
Like, I agree. It was a weird one in the fourth quarter.
Everybody's doing too much complaining and playing like marshmallows, man. Where is Tobias? Where is Ben? You know, we putting too much pressure on Joel. You know, we supposed to have two other stars. Like,
you know what Joel's body language was begging for last night, Reese? Somebody to come bail him out.
Right, absolutely. And we supposed to have two other guys that could bail him out easily.
Yeah, so
it's just unheard of, man.
I hear you. Thanks, Reese. Much appreciated. I mean, like, that's what his body language screamed to me was, I have to continue doing this because nobody else is I don't think Ben will never be this guy, in my opinion. Tobias, I thought, was taking step towards being it. Give me the damn ball and get out of my way.
Yeah.
You need that at times.
Yeah. And look, Doc Rivers on these airwaves a couple of weeks ago said that when Tobias Harris gets the ball and he's one-on-one straight line, he's unstoppable.
Yeah. Where was that?
Well, if you truly believe that, you needed points.
Call a timeout and draw up a play for him.
Yeah. Now, their timeouts were limited in the fourth. I'm not making an excuse. He was limited
there. But you can call it in from the sideline.
Yeah, you can. Does this all fall under the umbrella? Everything that we're talking about today, and I love that we have so many different things that we're pointing.
About.
Yeah. But does it all fall under the umbrella of Doc Rivers? And I don't want, well, of course he's the coach. I'm not saying that. But does it all, everything that you point to, like, well, Joel was this. Why didn't Doc do that? Does it all go back to Doc Rivers, or is it more individualistic with the players?
I would shift. I said Tobias was number two for me earlier. I would shift him to number three and probably have Doc too. I woke up to a text from my buddy this morning and says, I wasn't able to sleep last night. Doc's number one on my list, and listed about six things. One of the things he pointed out was the rotation he had in with no point guard. There was about a minute and a half they played with no point guard on the court, and it was almost like Doc had an alarm go off in his head. Oh, bleep. Shake, get in there.
No, you're right. And another thing that falls under your scrutiny, Jamie, is the play of how Doc was using Ben Simmons last night, and it is a linchpin.
This is the linchpin.
Ben Simmons, the last two games, sorry, I have a little frog in my throat, has shown you an ability to take advantage of his size mismatches on the court.
You're getting choked up there.
He is. I'm getting verklempt. And last night,
very emotional.
It's a very emotional time period.
Ben Simmons.
I love you, man. Last night, you saw it in the second quarter when they went on their run. Ben was crashing the lane, getting the pass from Embiid on the wing when he was getting doubled or tripled and taking advantage of a size mismatch. I think he had like three buckets in like five possessions there where it was either Young or Herder or somebody else guarding him. And he had 5 or 6 inches on everybody. And if it was Young, he had a foot on him.
Yeah.
And he got a couple easy baskets, you know, with that little right hook he had.
Sure. Got a nice lob from Embiid the one time.
Yeah.
From way up top the key.
Where did that go?
I don't know.
It's like you walk out to pick up basketball game and, you know, I got him, I got him, I got him. What's the first thing you do?
Matchup size.
Yeah. And you go, oh, well, that guy's a foot bigger than that other guy. Let's get him the ball.
Yeah.
That's just basketball.
Yeah, sometimes it's that simple, right?
And I was like, in the second quarter, I'm going, yeah, keep doing it. Keep feeding Ben until they stop him. You stopped it yourself.
Yeah.
You didn't let
you help them out.
You helped the Hawks. I mean, Charles, Shaq, and Kenny at halftime were like, what the hell defense are the Hawks doing? And I was with them. I was like, what are they doing?
Yeah, it just goes to the Sixers lost the game more than the Atlanta Hawks won it last night.
Yeah. I don't know why, if you can find a Ben Simmons rhythm. I'm sorry, this is a really emotional conversation. I think I'm dying
for you.
I think I'm dying. If you can get him rolling, why are you not keeping him rolling?
I don't know. It bothers me the way they use Ben Simmons off the ball, or their lack of. I would love to see him rolling down a lane more. I would love to see. Look, I know defenders collapse off of him, so picking his man is kind of tough when his man is 5 feet off of him. But you can get in their way in a place where Ben Simmons is going to get to, and I just don't think that they try to do that enough. It's
it's head-scratching at times what you have with Ben Simmons offensively, and I think it gets magnified, obviously, when you have Tobias Harris taking only two shots in the fourth quarter, when you have Joel Embiid not hitting a field goal in the second half.
Sure, all this is magnified after a loss because it was a... I mean, you could have ended the series last night.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to end it. The Hawks shouldn't have won that game. You gave it to them. And here we are again. I feel like I'm reliving Game 4 of Toronto series 2 years ago.
Yeah, it just... And Pat's so in agreement with me on this. It just sucks that you have to get back on a plane and go there again to play on a Friday night because as much as we are pissed off, the players feel that. The players feel, I can't believe we got to come back down here. And does that lend to maybe a poor performance? It could. You know, who knows? That's the troubling thing, the most to me, the most troubling thing about last night's loss. I do still think the Sixers win this in six. They'll turn it around tomorrow night. I think they'll win it down in Atlanta. But the fact that they have to go back down there is going to play a little psychological warfare on their minds.
Yeah, it's just annoying. It's kind of like when you have a mosquito flying around, you think you get it, and then all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, you see it again. It's just, you're not really worried about it. It's more of an annoyance that you have to go down there, because I'm not worried about the series. You guys aren't, but it's, you should have closed this out tomorrow, and instead, you're going to have to get on a plane and do this all over again, and it's...
Do you think Ben Simmons' aggression stops the first time he steps on the free throw line?
That's a good point.
Good question.
That's a really good question. Because it's wearing on him. You can see it in his face.
He's shooting, I don't have the exact number, but around 30%, 31% from the
free
throw line.
I want to say it was close to 35 going into last night. He was one for five.
So he's probably down to 31, 32%.
Well, and he's an emotional player, too. I mean,
I think so.
You see it with the way that he doesn't shoot the basketball because he's worried about the way it looks. He knows the way this looks. Remember, the way he ended the regular season, he wasn't playing well. He had a 6 week stretch there where he was really bad.
Yeah, I'd love to see the correlation from his aggressiveness and style of play before and after the first time he steps on the stripe.
Yeah.
Because I bet you...
I'll tell you what, that's something good to look for.
I bet you he becomes less aggressive after his first free throw attempt.
And I'll even go miss. Because if he goes two for two, you know he's going to keep it up, but... I don't know.
This segment was brought to you by NJM Insurance Group, committed to being upfront with their customers. NJM. No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. Get a quote today at NJM.com.
Coming up, 7:40, we're going to have Devon Givens with his three-pointers from last night. Can't wait to hear from him. And we also want to hear from you, 610-632-0975. Where do you lay the blame? Where does it go? Because... honest to God, with the 10 fingers that you have, it can go any 10 points, and I don't think any of them are wrong. 610-632-0975, John Kincaid Show. Time here at the Fanatic, 722.
97.5, the Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
John Kincaid Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. John is on vacation until a week from today. So Bob Cooney here with Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Coach Eric Camille. Connor Thomas is answering your calls. Heavy Chevy Mike on the YouTube beat.
And the 7 a.m. hour is brought to you by the Parks Casino Sportsbook app. Download at parkscasino.com/PA and use promo code Fanatic.
All right, so I talked about the moods of everybody coming in here today, and it was kind of funny. I take joy in kind of being an outsider. It's why I've always liked working odd hours. I don't like to conform to the normality of things.
Oh, so you're a hipster.
So coming in here, watching you guys come in here today, and I love it. I love it that there was so much emotion and quite frankly, just pissed off at last night's performance, and I'm there with you guys.
I was okay until Egan started comparing the process to Trae Young playing with no
arm. I was okay until you walked in with your face.
No, you both weren't okay.
I'm fine.
Of the people here today, you can say I'm the most rational.
I don't know if I'd ever say that.
Pat, Connor, and Coach, you would think woke up in a dumpster.
You're saying that Trae Young is offensive to basketball when all he's doing is getting an advantage for himself, which is the essence of sports.
You also said Joel Embiid doesn't flop.
So how can I say that you're being rational?
He plays with no honor, Bob.
Joel Embiid is looking for an Oscar every time he hits the deck.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Pat hates Joel Embiid. 610-632.
No, Jamie, that's our Twitter poll. Come on, get it right.
And tomorrow we will be doing the Mount Rushmore of something or other.
Mount Rushmore of Sixers that you hate.
We're just not sure exactly what it will be.
No, but I mean, I'm not going to let it affect my day. I think Connor and Pat might go home and like punch holes in their drywall.
No, well, this is the reason I'm bringing up the topic is because the emotions are raw when we get in here at 4:30 in the morning and just want to kill somebody over what the Sixers did last night.
I'm actually
rightfully so.
Somehow angrier this morning than I was last night.
Well,
and I didn't think that was possible.
So that's my question. When does it wear off? Okay, like, you can get, Pat and I could get in a fight, or you and Pat could get in a fight, and eventually, maybe a half hour later, you're going to be like, you all right? Yeah, okay, cool. And you make up. When does this Sixers, and I'm talking to everyone here, you guys and those listening, 610-632-0975, when do you get over this? When do you look ahead and say, okay, it really is all right. Joel Embiid will rest for a day and a half. He should be good to go. Come tomorrow night. The Sixers will win this in six. They're the better team. This was, as Jamie said earlier, probably an outlier.
Today's my therapy session. I'll be fine by 10 o'clock.
By 10 o'clock?
Yeah, I'll get it all out of my system.
Okay.
Because it was a long list. Coach, you, Pat, you saw my email last night.
Yeah.
I just had a running.
Oh, you know what? You just made the list.
I had a game four, just running notes.
Oh, you had diarrhea of the mouth last night.
Yeah, because there was so much that annoyed me.
It was awesome.
So I just fired off an email. I was like, do I trim this down to like five or six subjects? Nope, here's 12. And I just sent it across, and there was a lot to be irritated and annoyed at last night.
Unfortunately, we don't get to watch games together very often because of our weird hours, but we are going to do that now that we can get out and about more so and do it with listeners. But how do you guys watch the game? Because I was thinking of this morning. When you're watching it, are you screaming and hollering? Are you? Anthony was telling us the other day that he literally puts his hands on top of his head and paces during games because he gets that amped up. I'm more of a sit back, try to like figure things out, what's going on here. And if things go really bad, I smirk more than get mad.
One half I stood watching eating dinner the other day, maybe it was Friday night. And my wife even was like, why are you standing? I was just like, I don't know. I'm comfortable. Last night, you know, laptop on, Twitter open. I like seeing the live reactions of Sixers maniacs on Twitter.
I don't know how you do that.
It's not hard.
No, it just takes away. I don't know.
And I tweet too, and I kind of use those as almost my notepad.
Yeah.
So like, I like my gut reaction, so I can go back and when I'm making my emails, go like, oh, well, here's how I felt about this. So I kind of use it as a work resource. I'm sure some people say, shut the hell up, stop tweeting so much, you idiot.
No, never.
But yeah, I enjoy the. Well, same thing with Eagles games. Twitter and the live sporting event I really enjoy. So I spend a lot of time looking at Twitter, too.
Pat, you screaming and hollering, or what? How do you go about it? I know you had a game last night, but...
Yeah, usually it was tough. First half, my kid was crawling all over me, and it was difficult because I'm trying to concentrate, and they're playing well, but I'm like, all right, I can't do this. I got to go watch this alone in the basement. Usually I'll watch it alone. I talk crap a lot as if I'm in the game and like playing in it. So I'm screaming at Bogdanovich when they're up by 18. I was like, oh, try mean mugging now.
He looks
as
like a hitman, doesn't he?
As if he's... No, I think Gallinari looks more like a... I think I tweeted this out. He looks like a D-list henchman in a Liam Neeson movie.
Yeah.
But
maybe Bogdanovich is like that prince or king that wears like the long wardrobe that everybody hates. And he's like kind of King Joffrey older. You know what I mean?
No. But
really, just like hate the face.
He is.
Like,
no, they both are. Like, I can't stand
him.
Bogdanovich mean mugging to me is the, it's cringy. But I scream a lot at the TV. And it's either, you know, when they're up by a lot, I'll be screaming at the other team. Yesterday's second half, I was screaming, like, how the F are you letting them back in this game?
I didn't let out a peep last night.
No?
No.
You were just dumbfounded.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Like, I walked upstairs and my wife gave me the grin face, like, because she finished the fourth quarter upstairs. And I was just like, yeah, they soiled themselves.
I was kind of that way, too. I was just like,
I'd still view it as the outlier of the series. I think they're going to blow their doors off tomorrow night.
As long as Joel is healthy.
Yeah, we'll see. Dustin and Redding, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Dustin?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
Good. So, Bob, your question earlier about, you know, where to put the blame, as you said, there's a lot of places. But something I'm actually more disappointed in than anything else, as much as we want Joel to be superhuman every night and drop 40, that's not overly realistic, especially with him being a little hobbled. So I'm disappointed in the rest of the team.
Totally.
First and foremost, to not pick him up. He has been your backbone throughout the season. And then for Tobias to come up small, super disappointing. And then my second place blame, I think it has to be Doc. I don't understand the Korkmaz minutes at the end. And I also don't understand, you know, some of the rotations. It was a bit odd, but first and foremost, just really disappointed with the rest of the team not showing up and helping out their big guy.
Dustin, real quick, does this carry over in your mind? Is this a detriment to them going forward, or is it one game outlier?
It better not be, because I'm going to game 5 tomorrow and they need to whoop ass.
You'll see a whoop ass.
Yeah, I think you will too, Dustin. Thanks for the call. Much appreciated. I still have confidence in the series. Does it raise concerns moving forward? Yeah, because really good teams don't do it. Now, look, somebody's going to come out of the East. Well, and it's either going to be...
Brooklyn put up 83 points the other night.
Exactly my point. Brooklyn, the last two games, hasn't put up any points. I think it was 80 and 83 or something, whatever it was.
They haven't hit 100.
Yeah. Milwaukee played horrible the first two games of that series. The Sixers looked horrible, and I'm going to get into this more later, in certain quarters of this series where they were unrecognizable. Atlanta's not coming out of the East, so whoever does come out of the East, they're going to have some flaws in their back pocket.
I mean, if you put total credence in playoff wins and series, then the Suns are the clear favorite to win the NBA title.
You would think, right? The Suns are playing the best basketball.
They're steamrolling people.
And that's what bothers me most about all this.
But I don't necessarily equate the two. Like, I would put them probably as the favorite right now, but I don't think that they're just going to beat whoever comes out of the East.
If you were to match them up against anybody in the East right now...
I'd make them the favorite.
Yeah, but they're playing the best basketball.
Absolutely. And our guest in about 2 minutes knows firsthand, as he's got some blood playing on that team.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have Devon Givens' three-pointers coming up in a couple of minutes here.
But I don't think just because you go to a six-game series or a seven-game series makes you less likely to win a title than if you swept somebody.
Well, I hear you on that, but doesn't it concern you how, I've used this word and I'll say it again, unrecognizable this Sixers team has become in multiple quarters of this series?
It's about probably close to a full game. The first half of game one and the second half of last night was inexcusable. The rest of the series, they dominated.
Yeah.
So
shouldn't there be more of a... Should it have to be the top of the mountain to the depths of the oceans?
No, it shouldn't.
It should be somewhere in between, right? I mean, good all the time.
They had, 9 points in the final 6 minutes? Something like that? That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
And for Tobias and Ben to only attempt 2 field goal attempts in the final quarter when Joel Embiid clearly didn't have it is concerning. I'm not telling you it's not concerning, but I also think it's the outlier. I think either Joel Embiid or Tobias Harris will be much better come fourth quarter Wednesday night.
Before we get to Devon, does it concern you, though, that you're saying this is the outlier, but game one happened as well?
Yeah, but
I don't disagree with what you're saying.
There are two halves of basketball.
Yeah, so that's... But I'm saying, does it concern you that this is not that it's becoming a trend, but... Because it's not. I don't think it is, but...
But I think it's more their own doing than the Hawks doing.
Yeah, there's a couple ways you can look at it.
Caller has a point.
The turnovers in the first half is an outlier to... last night, the Sixers defense only, I think, came up with 3 or 4 turnovers.
Four. They forced basically one a quarter. That's ridiculous.
What the hell is that? They weren't getting out in transition at all last night.
Yeah.
And they still should have won the game. They didn't play their style of game and still almost should have won.
Well, let's hear more about it from Devon Givens.
This is the three-pointer with Devon Givens on 97.5 The Fanatic, home of 76ers basketball.
And Devon is brought to us, as always, by our good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. It's America's top-rated sportsbook app.
they took some of my money last night, and I thought that was quite rude of them.
Yeah, a lot of people were a little sour here today on our gambling adventures, but I'm sure Devon was not one of them. Devon, you got some good three-pointers for us today, my brother?
I believe so. I'll start with some energy from John Collins yesterday, which I thought really stood out specifically in the second half. While he had 5 offensive rebounds, 3 of those came late in the game where the Atlanta Hawks were surging their way back and eventually took that lead at one point by 1, of course, over the 76ers. And one that really stood out as we talk about the three-pointer happened late in the game as the 76ers, Furkan Korkmaz, had knocked down the three-pointer to make it 98-94, 2:44 on the game clock in regulation. And it was huge. It was a big one right there. And the Sixers did very well defensively on the other end, forcing Bogdanovich into a tough pull-up shot right around 17 feet. And John Collins got an offensive rebound. As a result, Trae Young, with one of his many assists last night, then found John Collins in the corner where the Sixers were scrambling defensively, could not figure out who to get out to try to close out and defend that shot. I believe eventually it was Harris or Simmons, and he knocked down that shot. And right there to make it 98-97, that was a prime opportunity for the Sixers to get the ball, slow things down, get a quality possession after having a good defensive possession since Korkmaz gave you a 4-point advantage. I thought that one, guys, really hurt the Sixers late in the game.
Did it surprise you that the energy level wasn't a little bit higher, as you alluded to?
Yeah, because yes and no, only because the way that they had went up by 18 early on in the game, had they sustained that and kept that type of momentum going the entire night, I believe that that would have been there. But when Atlanta would not go away, and that was more so of the Sixers not closing them out and putting them away than what Atlanta did to stay in it, I thought that with that momentum, Bob, you know how it is when you're on the floor and you're in that moment. Now you start to get tight and the energy is already there from the other side. Yours is really just zapped out of you and you're just hoping that things wind down. The clock is starting to dwindle and walk away with the victory, wiping your brow saying, man, we stole one. So yes and no when it comes to that energy.
Give me your second point, Devon, about last night's devastating loss.
Yeah, last night, as we all know, Joel Embiid had an opportunity to really give the 76ers a bucket there where he missed that layup opportunity late in the game where the score was 101-100. He missed the cutting layup with about 8 seconds to go. I thought he had taken, and we all know he's dealing with the injury and all. He even talked about it last night. Didn't really want to hear it, but it was what it was. He should have taken a power dribble. He caught it where he caught it and decided to just lean in a la Pat Ewing years ago when he missed that infamous layup against the Chicago Bulls. But it had Embiid taken the power dribble, in my opinion, just watching it and seeing it replayed over and over last night, I thought he would have had a better opportunity of not only making the basket, but also making the basket and getting fouled and also converting the free throw, which would have given them a 2-point advantage at that time. So I thought he kind of bailed the team out at Atlanta. He let them off the hook by panicking, going too fast instead of staying composed, taking a power dribble, and then whether it's a dunk exploding there, a layup closer to the basket, and or getting fouled. And even if he didn't make the basket, 2 free throws, I'm trusting him to at least make 1 of 2.
Is that the biggest flaw in his game right now, Devon? Joel Embiid, is his power game, isn't it? And is it something that he can improve upon?
He can definitely improve upon it. And it could be a flaw because, yeah, I think he's so good finesse-wise that he leans on that so often and it works. So how can we be upset about it? But in situations like this and others, there are times where we do see the power game can help him out, where he can just flat out bully him. I thought it was disrespectful last night. I hope he takes this into Wednesday night's game afterwards, where Clint Capella points out that he was fatigued. And when he gets fatigued, you can really do what you want to do against him. So, and that's on him. That's on him. And I hope he comes out and he shows that against Capella, where we'll see one of those 40-point nights for Embiid against that defense.
All right, what's your third one before we talk a little bit more about this bad loss?
Our favorite player. And look, 17 minutes in the second half, so 7 minutes off the floor, and you only take one shot. It was really about the quote at the end that really took me over the top last night, stating that he should have been more aggressive. I don't want to hear that after the fact. I want to hear that and see it in the moment
as you see your team struggling and begging for you to do something, where you aggressively in the third quarter in game number three decide to take over because you saw that that was what your team needed. Your team needed it badly last night, and you decided not to do it. You took one shot. And I'm speaking, of course, of Ben Simmons, who we all get on, and Bob, you and I are supporters, Jamie and Pat as well. And last night, I thought that he, again, let Atlanta off the hook. And sure, you can point at Doc Rivers for things that he didn't help him out with, but that's also the mentality of a player where you're in a big spot, big moment, give me the ball, and I'll do what I need to do to help us and guide this to a win. Sure, I'm sure, frustrated about the free throws and the concern. You can see it in his face when he walks to the free throw line. Even when he's standing there trying to get his feet together, he's kind of patting his feet, making sure they're properly set on the free throw line. He needed to do much better. And last night afterwards, he did not need to tell us that he needed to be more aggressive. We saw it.
Yeah, Devon, that's kind of my, as I digest the game still this morning, the thing that's making me angrier and angrier as the morning goes on here is, to me, Joel Embiid's body language screamed, can somebody bail me out? I don't have it tonight. And for Tobias and Ben to have a combined two field goal attempts in the fourth quarter, in your opinion, like, what role does Doc Rivers have in that? And what, you know, how much of the blame goes to Tobias and Ben there for just not taking the ball and saying, get the hell out of my way?
I would honestly, Jay, say it's more on the players than it is the coach. The coach can yell at them all he wants in the huddle and saying, hey, I need you to do this. I need you to do this. But they also have to recognize it. And we've seen Tobias do that, uplift the team, especially when Embiid doesn't have it. Simmons, when he talked about he felt disrespected that they put Gobert on him as a defender and he decided to go out there and have his career night with 42 points in that road loss against the Utah Jazz, you see the same type of moment there. These are veteran players that recognize the moment. The playoffs are not foreign to them anymore. At this time, they know what the difference is, and the difference was right there in their faces, and they decided not to step up in that moment. So we can point at Korkmaz and Milton and not having it and not delivering in that moment. That wasn't their spot. The spot was the other two star players who have performed well throughout this playoff so far, this postseason. But in that moment where you can bail your best player out who simply did not have it, as we saw, and we all recognized it, they had to recognize it in the moment right next to him.
Like Devon,
and that was the problem.
You know, you've been watching every Sun game, and rightfully so. If Devin Booker doesn't have it, he's got Chris Paul or your cousin to bail him out. Every other team in the league has that guy when their guy doesn't have it to bail them out. And the Sixers had no answer for their guy not having it last night. And it's jumping out in neon to me. I don't think it's something that's going to predict the rest of the playoffs, but man, that was pretty concerning last night.
Yeah, it was. Now, I do believe that they are able to bounce back in Wednesday night's game back here in Philadelphia. If they don't, shame on them. But you're right. It was something that really stood out that's going to give us a talking point leading into Wednesday night's game that shouldn't have been. This should be a conversation of, hey, they didn't do it. They didn't do it the way we wanted it to get done, but they figured it out at the very end. Another, as we'd like to talk about, check mark, something to, you know, a benchmark that they have reached as they're now elevating to that championship contender and things that you have to overcome to win. And still, they have plenty. This is a three-game series, and they have two at home, so it could still happen that way. But I also would have liked to seen it happen the way the game played out when your best player wasn't at his best. And your other two star players to really uplift the team and get them back here to Philadelphia with an opportunity to close things out Wednesday night in game five.
Devon, we talked last night on the pregame show about who we would start. And you and I both said George Hill for a couple of reasons. Try to get him out of a funk. You still have a threat at the three-point line. Doc Rivers decided to go with Furkan Korkmaz, which was a popular decision in a lot of people's eyes. Do you think that gets changed for game five, or do you think he'll stick with that?
I think he'll stick with what he has with Korkmaz being your other wing player. I do. And maybe that is even because Furkan Korkmaz does seem to play better in front of the home crowd. So I don't think Doc Rivers will change things. I don't think he'll look at that as a panic move. If anything, Bob, as we know, maybe he'll just have a quick trigger when it comes to the substitution and getting him out and inserting Hill,
Milton or Maxey in his place, but I think he'll stick with Korkmaz for game five.
Barring any injury update with Joel Embiid, is there anything long-term that concerned you about last night, or is it more of an outlier?
More of an outlier, if anything. I think the concerns that we've already had when we speak about Simmons or even questioning Harris, is he built for the type of role that we're asking of him as that secondary scorer for this team? Those things were already there. So it's more of, can you take us out of that thinking, more so than just simply adding to it like they did last night. It's adding to it, but we already knew it was there. Now we're just looking more for them to, once again, make those plays that make us remember these things as positives instead of negatives as we look back on this season and this series.
Well, I appreciate you on the three-pointers, Devon. Love always having you the day after games, and I love doing pregame with you before every Sixers playoff game. And tomorrow night, there's a rumor that you and I could be down at the Wells Fargo Center for our pregame show.
So it's home, but hopefully we perform way better on the road than they did last night.
That's right. Devon, thanks so much. Much appreciated. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy.
All right, see you, Devon.
Yeah, good insight right there. I mean,
he's always calming, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, Devon will talk you out of a bad situation by the straight toneness of his voice.
Yeah, there's no peaks and valleys with Devon. It's just consistent.
No, it's a nice straight line.
Yeah.
Why don't you ask him how much he struggled last night? Because he looks like George Hill. Yeah. The running joke. I'll shut my mic off.
George Hill's something we'll get into in the final 2 hours, I'm sure.
Yeah, we sure will. And we might even get into it coming up right after the break, because I have some questions about what's going on with the Sixers starting lineup and how much maybe they missed something. 610-632-0975. Where does your fault lie on the Sixers last night in that loss? Let us know. John Kincaid Show. Bob Cooney here with Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, and Coach Eric Camille. Time at the Fanatic, 752.
BetMGM took so much of my money last night. I really shouldn't even be promoting this, but they're good people. It's one of the best sites out there. Like yesterday, I signed on. They just gave me a free $10 bet. It's the Monday Club that they have. If you bet $50 within a week, you get a free $10 bet every single week. It's one of the reasons why I love BetMGM. So even when I do end up losing big, thanks to, you know, Joel Embiid going like 0 for 12 and everybody, you know, crapping the bed, it's okay. Because they want to help you out, and they want to help new customers right now get started with a free $100. So here's what you have to do. Log on to BetMGM.com or the BetMGM app, and then they're going to ask you for a promo code. Enter PatEgan100, and if you put $1 on the Phillies or Dodgers tonight, if either team hits a home run, you're going to end up winning $100 in free bets, regardless of how your bet does. But if you're not a baseball fan, guess what? They have basketball. They have NFL futures bets. They have the Stanley Cup playoffs going on. They have it all right now, and it's all at BetMGM. So hop on the BetMGM app or head on over to BetMGM.com. And when you sign up, once again, enter code PatEgan100. You'll win $100 when you bet $1 on the Phillies or Dodgers. When either team hits a home run, boom, you end up winning. It's a new customer offer. Paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years or older, Pennsylvania only. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, help is available. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. BetMGM Sports, a partnership with Hollywood Casino Morgantown.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is the John Kincaid Show. I'm Bob Cooney with Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Coach Eric Camille. As John Kincaid is taking a little vacation down at what he calls the beach.
Yeah. No, it's not the shore down there.
It's not. He's in Florida, and there where he's going, they call it the beach. If you go to Maryland, people in Maryland call it the ocean. We're going to the ocean. We call it, obviously, the shore.
I think we're better.
I think we're the best.
Yeah.
I think all the other ones are frauds.
I think nothing we do is wrong here.
It's absolutely ridiculous if you ask me.
I think they go to the water and without any honor.
Some would say
wow.
that.
You two just want to go today, don't you? We're going to let you go.
What do you mean?
I can tell.
He's supporting me there.
Yeah, like you're making some. You want us to fight.
He was being sarcastic. Jamie, no, if you didn't see it.
No,
he
agrees that Trae Young plays with no honor.
What is wrong with you?
Don't you give me that look. Well, I got to tell you one thing that I was wondering about last night as I'm watching that horrible, horrible Sixers loss. And that was the collapsing defense of the Atlanta Hawks. And of course you would do that when the Sixers have a player like Joel Embiid in the middle. But it seemed to be a little bit more out there last night. And I think it was because Danny Green wasn't in the Sixers starting lineup. Now, look, that's an eye roll kind of statement because do you really miss Danny Green that much? Well, I said yesterday in the pregame show, and I think yesterday here also, what Danny Green gives you is sometimes something that you don't see. And it's that major, major threat of an outside shooter. It's a guy that can stand in a corner and hit 50% of his three-point shots from the corner. Think of that. He's shooting almost 50% from corner threes this year. And when Danny Green's out of the game, it allows the Atlanta defense to fade into the lane, to take away or hinder a Joel Embiid, and take away a Ben Simmons, as we saw a lot last night. Furkan Korkmaz in the starting lineup, whether you agree or disagree, that's what Doc Rivers decided to do. You can compare the shooting, also another really good outside shooter. But Furkan Korkmaz doesn't pose the threat to me against the defense the way a Danny Green would. And I think Atlanta changed up things a little bit last night. And look what it turned into, a 103-100 win. In a game, yes, where you can point many, many, many fingers in different areas and be correct. But I think the Danny Green absence played a little bit more of a role, maybe, Jamie, than many of us see on the surface.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of what Danny does is not only space it in a half-court set. In a transition game, he also spaces it, too, because he runs to that corner and tries to get to his spot. He's the best corner three-ball shooter in the entire NBA. I mean, when you lose a skill set like that, it's going to have an effect. Team defense-wise, I think he's just a heady veteran player. He plays angles well. He gets in passing lanes. He plays with a high basketball IQ, and it doesn't always necessarily translate to the box score. You know, sometimes he's what he's been this series, which was really cold before he got hurt. But you knew the hotness was coming. He's a streaky shooter, and what you do with streaky shooters is you have them keep shooting because eventually it's going to turn. And I felt like he was right on the cusp. I said that right.
Precipice? Or cusp?
Cusp. Well, I think I just combined two words.
You absolutely did.
See what this loss does to me? On the cusp of coming out of it, and the Sixers really benefiting from it. But Seth Curry stepped up in his kind of cold streaks. And it is what it is, but I think his absence is definitely noticeable. I mean, anytime you're forcing a Furkan Korkmaz into the starting lineup, it's noticeable.
Pat, you feel it a little bit, or are we overstating what Danny Green means not being in this lineup last night and probably throughout the rest of the playoffs?
I think you're overstating it only because they should have had some semblance of contribution from the bench. If this was Brooklyn and you lose Danny Green, that's huge. This is a Sixers team that we constantly say is so deep. You didn't, like, George Hill could have probably played that role, and especially with the offensive game, and he just didn't. You know, I mean, it just, Korkmaz didn't really add much. I mean, nobody filled in for the absence of Danny Green. When he's not hitting his shots, he's great defensively, and you can have Korkmaz in there who struggles defensively, but offensively you kind of know what he's getting. But he's got to give you that. He didn't really give you much yesterday. No one really stepped up in the absence of Danny Green, so I think this is amplified.
Would you guys change Furkan Korkmaz out of the starting lineup and plug somebody else in based on what you saw last night, Jake?
The only guy I would Shake maybe is in consideration, but the only guy I would seriously consider is George Hill. I probably wouldn't coming home for Game 5. I think you just go with what worked. I mean,
didn't work though.
Well, because of Furkan's,
if we're being honest, they lost the game, so it didn't work.
Yeah, but Furkan's like 16th on my list of complaints last night.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, you know, I don't think he's even close to a reason why they lost. His defense sucks. I mean, he's a defensive liability.
big time. But no, I probably would stick with it for one more game because I think it kind of screams desperation coming home in a game five.
I heard yesterday afternoon on these very airwaves, and I talked to Mike about it during a break. He was an advocate for Matisse Thybulle starting, and I said, that's interesting. Why? And he said, because I think you really put the screws to them if you come out defensively and really throw it at them, meaning specifically Trae Young, and you just impose your will on that way. And it really made me think, like, that's not a bad thought.
But you lose so much spacing offensively.
Yeah, offense hasn't been your problem. You know, last night, only 100 points. They've been averaging 123 during this series. Offense hasn't been the problem. So I was kind of wondering, maybe is that a way to go? Do you go defensively knowing that with this group, you've scored 123 points, whether the bench has been good or bad or vice versa with the starters? I don't know. It's intriguing to me.
I wouldn't because, look. And by the way, congratulations to Matisse for getting second team all defense.
Yeah, how about that?
For the amount of minutes he plays, that's truly pretty remarkable. I don't want to lose his defense off the second unit. It's a great option to bail Ben out if he needs a breather on Trae. He plays with the second unit. And before last night, I mean, Gallinari and Herter are coming off the bench for Atlanta. Herter got the start last night. So I think that's a nice thing to be able to throw at one of those two guys if it's... the true second unit run. So I would leave Matisse alone. I don't think he brings enough to make Ben and Joe's life easier in a half-court offense.
Well, you better make Joe's life easier because it was hard as hell last night, that's for sure. And I think it mostly starts with him. Chris and Yardley, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Chris?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
How are you, buddy?
I'm on the cusp of this, of some great...
You like that word, don't you, Chris? Do they teach that in the school where you teach?
No. That's custom fist was never part of
it. You know, sometimes when your mouth just gets ahead of your brain and you combine two words and it turns into diarrhea.
Interestingly, gentlemen, I have Lyme disease, so I know exactly what it's like when your brain decides to...
That's no joke. Yeah.
I've had that before. It sucks.
So, watching the Sixers, I think by my phone calls to you, gentlemen, you know that I'm a fiery individual, and I can also be pragmatic. So watching a Sixers game is like watching somebody with multiple personalities struggle, because one moment I'm flipping chairs and jumping up and down, and the next I'm like, okay, we got to relax here. Got to relax. We're going to be fine. And then I'm making up curse words. That's fun. So cusp of this is, trust me, that's it.
Is this easily fixable, Chris?
Say that?
Is this easily fixable?
I actually think what you just proposed, I think, would fix it, because in game two, there was a shot of Trae Young when he looked so perplexed because the defense was all over him. He couldn't do anything. His game was literally taken from him. He didn't know what to do. And I think his team follows in suit. What he does, they do. And I think putting somebody like Thybulle on Young would piss him off to the effect of watching somebody get frustrated and then make your switches again. I don't care. At this point, I hate Trae Young so much. and by the way, and second to my hate for Trae Young is Bogdanovich. And I realized, and this is going to mess you guys up, but I want you to imagine Bogdanovich's nose in front of Trae Young's forehead, and you have the Atlanta Hawks logo.
Wow, that's pretty good, Chris. Thanks a lot for the call.
Bogdanovich just screams like a Netflix series, like creepy guy in a trench coat that comes in and poisons somebody and bounces.
He had a smirk last night that looked so European spy, bad spy.
Yeah, and that horrible haircut. He looks like a bad spy hitman.
And Gallinari walks like, you know, he just slayed 50 dragons walking into a party saying, I'm all that.
Bogdanovich to me looks like a computer-generated sketch. he doesn't look real.
He looks like an avatar.
Yeah, he does. I can't. I hate him.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. You know what's not bad? Hold on, James. Philly Sports Trips. Make sure you put your deposit down now at phillysportstrips.com to join us in Vegas. Jamie Vegas in October for the ultimate birds away game trip. That's phillysportstrip.com. By the way, what?
The honorless three ball that Trae Young attempted last night, somebody sent me the video of, so I retweeted that.
Oh, did you?
If you would like to see exactly what little honor he plays with. Have you ever questioned somebody else's honor in the way they play their professional game?
And I'm being absolutely serious.
I say this in like 70% jest, but it really does irritate me. It's a hard style of basketball to watch. Matisse
fight with honor.
Matisse has him absolutely locked up. You have to watch the play. It's he realizes he can't beat Matisse from the top of the key, so he tries to launch into him when Matisse is getting spun around on a moving screen, mind you, and try to. It's pathetic basketball.
I felt like the refs kind of let him play a little bit yesterday, though. There was one play where he tried to generate contact on a bad 3-point shot. And he did the acting job, and I think it was Matisse who was guarding him. And Matisse was the same thing. Matisse like went right up with him, but didn't, you know, initiate contact, and the refs let it go. And I thought, okay, that's a call that Trae Young would have gotten game one and probably game two. And I think the refs are now kind of on to his shit.
And I don't want somebody tuning in right now for the first time to think I'm blaming this on the refs.
You did it all fair.
Yeah. And good job you not calling his crap.
You hate the refs.
Well, I'll tell you what. I agree with you, Pat, that I thought the referees did let them go a little bit more last night. And I think it's something that's incumbent upon them to make it easier for themselves, meaning the referees, that they have to let these guys play a little more. If you let them play and a guy complains, he hit me, play through it, you're going to get less flopping, probably less complaining. Look, I know it's a huge thing to start changing the way referees can call games now in the middle of playoffs. But it's only going to get easier, I believe, for players and for refs if you just let them play. Let them play a little bit more.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess to everyone's point, the style that Embiid and Young play, I mean, they're flopping all over the court like dead fish on a boat deck.
Because it's getting called.
And now they're both frustrated because it's not getting called. Like, it wasn't just one guy last night who was frustrated. They both were frustrated at the lack of calls.
Yeah, I don't know. I hate to put a spotlight on referees.
No, I do too.
But I agree with you. Like, there needs to be a little more. Like, it's the playoffs. I grew up in my life where the playoffs was hard-fought basketball, and it's physical, and it's a grind. And now it's like, it's kind of ticky-tacky and
isn't
lame.
It funny that we grew up
all
in an era
all around, not just
right.
six or seven.
No, not
yeah,
at
yeah.
all. But we grew up in an era where it was physical, tough basketball, and it wouldn't have called half as many fouls as they call now.
Like the Dwight Howard rebound, for example, last night. That's a basketball play. Like
if you review
it and look at it, yeah, of course it's a. But John Collins came crashing in on his back. Dwight's boxing out legit, not throwing an elbow, just a legit box out, and Collins caught his elbow. It's a basketball play. If you review everything in the NBA. More often than not, it's going to look like a foul when you slow it down and watch it 35 times.
My complaint on that was, how the hell, if you're Dwight Howard, do you anticipate his face being at your waist?
He was boxing out.
You don't. You anticipate a chest or a waist area being there, and that's why you're expanding your body to box out.
Like, that's just lame to me.
I mean, I don't know. Collins was kind of coming in to try to beat him low.
He kind of crashed low, like he was trying to get under his arm almost.
You can't tell me that the guy's face is usually there.
Yeah.
Like, that has to come into play. I didn't love that call. Yeah. Now, Dwight Howard's another interesting subject here, and we haven't really talked about it.
I thought he was great last night, and he should have stuck with him more.
Exactly. Played real effective in the first half. He's been good in this playoffs. It wasn't just last night. All playoffs, he's been really, really good.
Now, I'm starting to wonder, because he's played always with the second unit, it appears Doc doesn't want to play him much with the first unit at all. And he doesn't get on the floor with a Ben Simmons all that much. And I think there's a comfortability factor where Doc says, I can't play him 25 minutes, and I'm only playing him with the second unit. Because he has a nice little thing with Matisse and Milton and Maxey where they throw him lobs at the right time and he goes up and gets them. But he was effective in the first half. And Embiid struggled mightily. It sounds silly to be calling for, oh man, they should have had Dwight Howard in there for Joel Embiid a little bit more. But shouldn't he?
Well, I mean, what was his minutes played last night? I think it was only like roughly
13?
12 minutes, right in the middle of me and you.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
12 minutes and 10 rebounds.
Yeah, like last night, and he was 3-for-3 from the field, 1-for-2 from the line. To me, last night, that warrants like a 16-minute run. Because he was effective in both halves. Joel came back in the fourth quarter. I think it was kind of early, and then he took like another
breather and came back in. But Dwight was effective when he was in. And Doc's done a good job of this year, which is riding the hot hand. I know it, how it sounds saying, you know, Dwight Howard should have been left in over Joel Embiid. But I probably would have given him a couple more minutes, maybe like 3-4 more minutes a run.
Yeah, it just appears pretty obvious to me that Doc doesn't like him with that first unit.
No.
So in the playoffs, you're playing your first. I mean, Tobias 39, Simmons 36, Curry 35. Those guys are putting in major minutes. So you're limited when you can play Dwight Howard if you're not comfortable with him in that first unit. But he seemed pretty effective on the court last night, as you said, James. A minus 3 in 12 minutes, okay. But when Joel Embiid was out there, he wasn't good last night. He wasn't good. I thought you could have found maybe a little bit more time to get Dwight Howard in there.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, this might be hindsight 20-20. Because if you're Doc in the moment, you want Joel Embiid on the court.
No like, question.
We've seen him struggle before and snap out of it. And I think to Doc's point here, he probably thought it was coming last night.
Yeah, I don't fault him for that. Mac and Myrtle Beach, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. You want to talk about Doc and Embiid? What do you got, Mac?
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. Factually, Embiid was so tired, he couldn't even function. He kept falling on the defensive end, falling on the offensive end. He was tired. We had Howard playing a great game. Why can't he catch an alley-oop from Ben Simmons? Ben Simmons throws the same pass. We probably would score 3 or 4 baskets and stop some of their momentum with the way he was playing defense and the way he was checking out. And the other thing is, why doesn't Korkmaz run to the corner? Korkmaz doesn't run to the corner. He's a great corner shooter. If he runs to the corner, we'll get the same kind of shot Danny Green gets, and we'll probably score a lot more points. So yeah. That's my whole point.
It's where, thanks, Mac. I think where the decisive advantage in my eyes with Danny Green over a Korkmaz is when the Sixers get out on a break, Danny Green is an expert at getting where he needs to be, wants to be, and catching and shooting. I'm not sure Korkmaz is there yet.
No, and that was another problem in the game last night. 4 turnovers?
Yeah.
4?
Yeah.
How is that possible with this defense? And that led to you not being able to get out and run in transition. You know, the Hawks shot 36%. There should have been a little more opportunity to get out and run, but it didn't seem like they were quick getting out of their rebounds last night. And that maybe affects Korkmaz. If he can, hey, Cork, just go to the corner, man. If it's any transition play, just run to the corner, and more often than not, they'll probably find you.
Yeah.
Because Ben Simmons, you know, not that this is a day to laud him, but he's kind of perfected that, finding that pass.
Best assist, man, on 3-pointers. Pat, is this the biggest choke you've seen in a while last night?
When I was going to bed last night, I was thinking about this. I was, you know, fuming, and I thought this is the biggest Philadelphia playoff choke job since Cliff Lee in 2011 when he was given a 4-0 lead against the Cardinals. He ended up blowing it. They lost the game 5-4. They ended up losing the series. That was the best Phillies team I've ever seen. It was better than 08.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there going, you blew an 18-point lead to a team on the road. You had them on the ropes. You really should have like broken their will and taken the crowd out of it. You let them kind of inch back towards the end of the first half. They cut it to 13. And then you just never put, you know, your foot on their neck. And it's the difference between game one and this game. They had an 18-point lead in this game, and they blew it. In game one, they got their doors blown off, but they came back. So there was a little bit of a positive you could take from the game, the way they ended it, of, okay, maybe they had the momentum. I don't feel like this team has momentum right now with the way that game went. And, yeah, they choked yesterday, and I think it's the biggest choke job arguably since that Cliff Lee game 10 years ago.
Wow.
We haven't had many playoff experiences to compare it to. But yeah, you're probably right.
To compare chokeisms?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like we're rich.
Yeah,
I mean,
and that's the thing. They're few and far between. I couldn't really think of another.
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
another choke job, wow. But.
And that was devastating.
Yeah. And
Cliff Lee's loss. That
well,
was.
And Cliff Lee's loss, you go, okay, it was kind of like how I'm acting now, ironically enough. It was, all right, it's annoying, but they'll win that series. Because they were such a dominant team in 2011, there was no doubt in my mind that they would win that series. And there's really no doubt in my mind they'll win this series, but you kind of wonder the momentum factor. You've talked about it before, about how that carries over. Joel Embiid's health is obviously a factor. They're probably annoyed they're going to have to go back to Atlanta on Friday. Atlanta's coming in.
peacocking around. Bogdanovich is mean mugging everybody. I mean,
you gave him an inhaler last night. You gave him a bailout on the series. When if you close that out last night, the series is over.
You're up 18, and the way that fan base was reacting and the way that the Hawks were reacting, they were flatlined.
By the way, what the hell is up with Hawks fans courtside? Why do they stand?
I don't know.
That really bothered me last night.
Wow.
Bunch of weirdos.
Okay.
They don't know how to act at a game because they just found out their city is a
city. They stand around like they're new to basketball.
Because they are.
Sit the hell down. If I'm in the fourth row, I'm throwing bags of peanuts at their head. Sit down.
8 a.m. hours brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com.
Peanuts?
Much of the blame of last night's game from Jamie has gone to the head coach, and he's going to give you another reason why when we get back. 97.5 The Fanatic, this is the John Kincaid Show. Time at The Fanatic is 8:22.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. John Kincaid Show. Bob Cooney, Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, and Coach Eric Camille. Can you finally breathe now, Pat? Are you feeling it? Can you breathe a little bit now? Are you feeling better at all?
I was with Jamie. I used the show like this as therapy.
Okay.
You come in angry, you leave, you're like, okay, I got it all out.
I've seen a change in coach. Coach is a little more affable.
He's a little tired today.
I would say.
Cranky.
Yeah, he was sleeping on the couch when you and I came back from getting coffee. He was more cranky earlier today, but I think he has show anxiety, and then it goes away as the show goes along, maybe. Is that what it is, Coach?
He misses John.
I could see that.
I do not miss John.
Wow. That was aggressive.
You know your mic was on.
Yeah, I know. You might want to dump that, Pat.
My inner monologue not working today.
Wow. Aggressive.
Jeez,
but,
Coach. All right.
All right. That's what it is. It's a chance just to get over whatever it was that we watched last night. And as we're sitting there in the middle of the third quarter, I told you guys this, that storm started coming. So our dog gets really anxious when storms come.
You
got to
get her the
panting.
Thunder jacket.
Well, we looked up thunder, we looked up headphones for dogs last night.
Just try the thunder jacket. People
headphones.
Have great
headphones.
What the hell are you talking about? You're getting her AirPods?
What are you doing?
What the hell's a thunder jacket? It was developed by a mother whose child had autism and found that he was comforted when wrapped up tightly, like swaddled.
Right, yeah.
So she basically applied it to dogs with anxiety, and it's a Velcro thing you put around their torso when they are anxious, and it's supposed to help soothe them.
No, Bob's getting beats by Benji over here.
So
it's like, I think, I want to say 40 or 45 bucks, but I didn't have success with the Bootsy. It didn't work with her, but a lot of people I know have had tremendous success with it.
All right, I'm going to give that a try. But so the dog starts panting, going crazy. It's early in the third quarter, and the thunder, lightning, and then I'm sitting there, and everybody says it, when a tornado comes, you hear this noise, and it sounds like a freight train. So, not that we had a tornado, but I heard this unbelievably weird noise, so much so that we went to the window, opened up the curtain, and there was a full trash can literally flying across my front lawn.
Is part of you like, this is awesome? Or was
part of me was like, why are all you people gathered in front of glass when something like this is happening? Get away from it.
Because I love when nature gets wild like that.
Oh, I could sit outside if I'm covered and watch the storm come all the time.
I love that stuff. When it started pouring last night, because it was coming down in buckets, I was like, this is awesome.
And now there was trash all, because last night sucks. Was trash
of
night.
Course. It always comes on trash.
Yeah,
night.
And I didn't put out my trash. I kept it on the side of the house knowing that a storm was coming.
That's
so mine didn't.
That's a veteran neighbor move by you.
I was probably the jerk neighbor, though, when at 3:45 this morning, I was rolling out two heavy trash cans. I'm sure the neighbors didn't love that.
Well,
but
Your letter's not in the neighborhood, you know?
That's true. As this was happening, the storm came. I said out loud, kiddingly, wow, I hope this isn't a sign of things to come for the Sixers. And sure enough,
jeez,
that's what it turned
out. So we know who to blame, Jamie.
Wow, yeah. Wow.
Way to speak it into existence, Bob.
Yeah, so that's my question to you guys now is, do you think this is a carryover? Is there anything that's going to carry over? Did we blow it off? We're starting to breathe a little bit now. Our anxiety levels are starting to get down to normalcy. Is this something, are you afraid that might carry over into tomorrow night? Because the only thing that I'm nervous about carrying over, the only thing I'm nervous about carrying over is Joel Embiid's health.
Same. If you tell me he's the same he is in games, you know, 2, 3, and 4, then I have no fears about it carrying over whatsoever. But if he's playing through his injury like he was last night, where it fatigues him and he's flopping and doesn't have kind of confidence in his legs to land, I have concerns. And part of it, I almost wonder if Embiid's like infectious in that way. Didn't it seem like the energy was just off for the whole team last night? Like second chance opportunities for the Hawks, I felt like they got a lot of, and kind of loose balls. Like it wasn't the same gusto that they normally play with. And I wonder if it's from the head on down. Like if Embiid has that lack of energy or people know he's struggling, how infectious it is throughout the roster.
Well, it's funny you bring up loose balls, because when he dove on the floor to get that one in the first quarter, second quarter, whatever it was, that appears to be when something may have happened that caused him to go back to the locker room.
Yeah.
They pointed to that last night.
I wonder what his treatment was last night.
Ice everywhere.
He seemed to hit the deck more last night than he normally does.
Oh, in the second half.
He's a guy who hits the deck a lot.
Yeah, in the second half, he couldn't stay on his feet. I mean, he was falling all over the place.
You know, and the story that he
has... But I put that to his knee issue and not, like, a flopping issue.
I wonder about this. When the story, Ramona Shelbourne came out with the story, I guess about a month or so ago, and in the story about Joel Embiid, he said that it's a way that he's been taught to deal with taking the pressure off his knees, and that's to let his body go limp in the fall. I've never heard of that before. I don't know if you guys have, but I've never heard of it before. I've heard of athletes say, when I fall, I need to be like a football player. Football players let their body go limp when they fall. It's just a natural thing to do, and they fall more than anybody or get tackled. They go to the ground more than anybody. Is this the right way of doing things? I mean, I hate to see a 7-foot, almost 300-pound man falling to the floor as often as this guy does.
I hear you. I don't know what the right answer is. I know he's a guy that has an unprecedented injury history, and I can't say if it's the right or wrong way. I wouldn't think it is, but at the same time, anytime, you know, he lands awkwardly when he jumps, when he leaves his feet, he lands awkwardly. So if that's something they think will take less impact on his tendons and ligaments, and then okay, but I wish he would play a little stronger of a game. I think he would be less prone to injury if he did.
I honestly wish he would learn how to land. You can practice that. You can practice landing, whether it's holding on to a rim after a dunk a little more until you're parallel to the floor, or until you're perpendicular to the floor.
But he's not, you've said it, and you and Devon have talked about this before, he's not a good jumper. He's so large. It's almost like in his mind, he thinks he's like this 6'8 guy because of what he can do. And like that Kobe Mamba spin fadeaway he had. He does things that 7'2 guys can't do.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he gets caught by surprise how close his legs are to the floor. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's almost like, oh, I forgot there was like 6 inches of leg there. And I thought I was coming. It's just, it's weird.
Yeah, when it first started, I equated it to him growing 3 inches or whatever it was, 4 inches maybe, from the time he had the foot surgeries and wasn't on the floor. So he played at Kansas at 6'10 or whatever, comes back, and all of a sudden he's 7'7", 2. I equated it to that early on, but now he's been this size for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he can't learn how to fall, but or how to land, rather. But, Jamie, you have some ire going towards the head coach today. And here's another point of interest, and it's a linchpin.
This is the linchpin.
Yeah, look, it's, you know, you play the blame game after losses. And last night I thought there was 12 instances to point and blame at. You know, number one, Joel Embiid's play, I think, is the main reason they lost in that fourth quarter. You know, in the second half, he was 0 for 12. It's inexcusable. You blew an 18-point lead. But part of it is Doc Rivers. We talked about it with Devon earlier. You know, most of the blame goes to Ben and Tobias for their disappearance in the fourth quarter. They only took two combined field goal attempts between both of them. That's the majority is on the players. But maybe I, out of a timeout, draw up a play or two for Tobias to get him involved. He needed to be the Robin to Joel's Batman last night. And this is the thing that's been driving my buddy Brian Hicks crazy. Because all regular season, Tobias usually was one of the not first subs. He would stay on with the second unit
right.
and play with them.
Yeah.
Now in these last two games and frankly these playoffs, Tobias is one of the first guys off the court. And he's had a lot of hot starts. And last night he started out pretty well. And again, he's like the first sub out. And I didn't notice it until my buddy started texting me about it. And I was like, you're right. This is kind of weird. Why are you removing the hot hand from the game first?
Yeah.
Now, there has to be some reason for it that maybe I'm not seeing how he staggers it throughout the course of the game. But again, in the fourth quarter, Seth Curry was your best player last night. He was on the bench for way too long. I thought Doc's rotations overall last night were pretty aggravating, and I didn't really understand them. We talked about Dwight Howard earlier. I thought he earned three, four more minutes of run in that third and fourth quarter. I thought he was pretty effective. So I just didn't get the flow of the rotations last night. And it's something I'd like to see a little better come tomorrow night.
Pat, was Doc at the top of one of the top things at your list of difficulties?
He was way up there. Everything Jamie said, I mean, looking at Dwight Howard's game, he only played 12 minutes. He had three offensive rebounds in 12 minutes. Joel Embiid had 21 boards, but he only had two offensive rebounds. I mean, the energy that Dwight gave you last night, like he kind of at one point silenced the crowd with one of his dunks because John Collins' dunks were really getting the crowd back into it, and they were just dunking all over the Sixers. And then
they
Dwight
were
Howard,
momentum killers of
yeah.
Collins' dunks.
But then Dwight came down and gave a dunk of his own, and it was like all of a sudden shut him up. I didn't really understand Doc's rotations last night either. I thought Doc did a really poor job of coaching when it became obvious that Joel Embiid wasn't Joel Embiid.
All right, here's something that drove me nuts with Joel Embiid last night. You guys might roll your eyes at me on this one. So there was something going on with him, I think we can all agree. He wasn't 100% physically ready to go. There is a point in the second quarter where a whistle is blown, and I think it was Gallinari or somebody else took a jump shot on a dead ball, and Embiid feels the need to go up, which all NBA players do, and block it because you don't want to see the other team watch a ball go in the basket because it might get them going. And I'm thinking, seriously, dude, your legs are hurting you. You have a why there?
Well,
then at the end of the quarter, not the end of the quarter, I'm sorry. I think it was when the Sixers went up like 18. Atlanta calls timeout. Trae Young has the ball in his hands, and he's starting to walk towards his basket like he's going to shoot it. And Joel stays on the floor. Little cat and mouse game. Trae throws it up there, and Embiid goes up to buy. You have so many jumps in those legs. Why are you doing that on a dead ball? Does it seem insignificant? Yeah, but if it takes two jumps out of you for later on in the game, why the hell is that important to you?
Normally, if he's doing that completely healthy, I love it.
Like everybody does it.
Yes.
It's
but
stupid.
It's the same thing the night before in game three when Clint Capella kind of tabletopped him. You're up 20 points. You don't need to pick up a foul there, and you don't need to. You can give him a basket occasionally if it means preserving your health. And I didn't think that was the same thing. Like, I didn't think he needed to exert the energy on what was most likely either going to be a foul or a made basket. So it's the same thing. Like, if you only have so many, he's so important to this team and this whole thing that you do want to see him try to preserve himself a little bit.
It equates to going back to when I would watch practices when he was hurt and him come out in flip-flops and start shooting. And I'd be like, are you kidding me? I would not let this guy anywhere near a floor without tape, sneakers, anything like that. I just don't know why he's wasting those jumps. Chris in the Northeast, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Chris?
What's going on, Bob? What's going on, everybody? I love the show.
Thanks, buddy.
So you just asked the question, do I think this is going to be a carryover? I think it is. But I got a couple other questions too. But so the first game when Atlanta was beating us and then we made that rally towards the end and then they carried over into the second game for us. That's pretty much what happened with them last night. They were down 20, battled back, won the game. You keep saying outlier, but it's 2-2. Trey's bound to have a 10 for 13 game from three sooner or later. And then I got us going to game seven, and this could get ugly. As for a couple other questions I was thinking about watching the game, is like, is this why the national media doesn't give us the credit of a number one seed because of games like this? Because Milwaukee and Brooklyn would have swept the land already. Why are we 2-2 with these guys? How many times during this series have we questioned Doc Rivers? I mean, I know he's a good coach, his resume, pedigree, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, like, Doc, come on. You're doing a lot of stuff that has us scratching our head. Like, what's going on, big guy? I thought we were getting a better coach, but we're still doing stupid stuff with better players. So it's like, what's going on? Like you said, why didn't you call any plays for Tobias or Ben when you noticed Embiid didn't have anything going?
Yeah, all fair questions, Chris, and some that you have to maybe even search harder to find the answers. I know that NBA coaches don't want to call every play and every series down, and they want to leave it up to the players. And there was a situation, I think it was Friday night, where Ben Simmons came over and said something to Doc, and you could hear him say, well, then do it. You know, yeah. Where he was kind of like, hey, look, they're doing that. Well, then do it.
Yeah.
You're putting your trust in your players because you hope that all the practices, all the things that you've seen that you've gone over in the film room, that they know what you want.
Well, that's the most concerning thing about last night to me. And I really hope it doesn't carry over, and I don't think it will, is the players' recognition in that fourth quarter. Like, Doc shouldn't have to tell Tobias, look, dude, we need you. Joel's off. Like, he shouldn't. And Tobias was just, when he was off ball, I'm sure you're going to rewatch the game today. Chart Tobias Harris off ball for me. It seemed, and this is just my gut off of one view, that he was kind of standing around a little bit. And then a couple times he did get the ball at the top of the key. He tried a couple dribble drives, but then it was like another kick out to Curry or to whoever. It didn't seem like he had anywhere near a killer attitude last night. And I needed to see more from him. You know, I said it earlier. I don't want to. He's been great in these playoffs, but he's a max player. And between him and Ben, somebody's got to be that Robin. And you can't stand around and watch an offense go through Furkan freaking Korkmaz in the fourth quarter of a tight game. And I understand he hit a wide open shot, and that was huge. But I'm going to count on my $185 million player more than I'm going to count on a guy that cleared waivers last offseason.
Yeah, and Pat, you have a specific play that you think, I don't know if it turned the game or that stood out to you mostly?
It was a run. It was a run that just, it still has my blood boiling. And when I was writing everything down, I once again got angry. So 9:47 left in the
game.
Are
you angry now?
I'm not happy.
Okay.
I'm not happy. 9:47 left in the game. They're up 89-85. And they got a stop that was negated by the foul on Dwight Howard that you guys talked about earlier with his elbow going into John Collins. The Hawks then capitalized. They drilled a three and made it 89-88. Shake hit a N1, 92-88. Then this is exactly how the next 4 minutes went. Stop. Shake missed a layup. They got a defensive stop. Tobias was blocked at the rim. They got a defensive stop. Shake missed. They got a defensive stop. They had a turnover. Embiid checked in. Then they got a defensive stop. Embiid airballed. Trey hit a floater to make it 92-90. They had a turnover. And then it was a goaltending to knot it up in 92-92 all. The Atlanta Hawks tried so hard to give this team the game. The defense was there. For the next 4 minutes, they had nothing but stops. And they just failed to capitalize because of turnovers, bad shot selection, getting blocked at the rim. That, to me, was the turning point of the game. From 9:47 until 5:54 left in the fourth quarter, that was it. That little stretch, that four-minute stretch, was it. Because you should have taken that lead by four and widened it, and instead, you let them get back in the game and eventually win it.
And all spearheaded by one of the plays you mentioned. Tobias seems to have an open layup. and gets blocked. I think it was Collins.
Yeah.
Who went up and blocked it. A really, really nice block. Good block. But you're 6'8", 6'9". You have to finish there. And to Jamie's point, you're a match player. You got to finish that. You got to get to the foul line. Something. To allow a defender just to come over and cleanly block you on that?
Yeah.
That can't happen. That's a great series of events, and it should stick out in all of our minds. The Sixers came up defensively. They showed up defensively in
that
stretch. That was a
great team defense effort there.
Yeah, and you...
They had five straight stops on the defensive side, and they could not capitalize.
They pooped the bed offensively in that series.
It's poop again.
I know. You're falling right into Jamie's wheelhouse here, Pat.
I mean, if you convert two or three of those, it's a completely different game, obviously, because they lost by three. But I'm saying the momentum in the game shifts. All of a sudden, Atlanta starts getting their stops. They get their swag back. Next thing you know, Trey hits one of those floors. I mean, it's just, that was the game.
Yeah, no, it's a great stretch that you talk about.
It's a horrible stretch.
A great point that you bring up about the stretch.
Does that sound better? Sounds better. I'm getting to a better place. This is therapeutic, yes.
Okay, because we're probably going to get word. Probably not going to get word today about Joel Embiid.
I was going to say, are we going to get word?
Probably not. I think I didn't check my emails, but they're probably scheduled for off today. They'll go in and watch film.
Do you think he gets any kind of scan today? To see if the damage has gotten worse.
I don't know. You'd have to, right? Probably. I guess you're doing it almost after every game.
I mean, I would think
after every game you're getting an MRI to see if it's getting worse or not. And if he's feeling pain down there.
I mean, he's clearly feeling pain, whether it was his back or his knee.
It can get worse, as we've talked about.
Absolutely, it can get worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's highly concerning. I don't think we're going to hear anything until 90 minutes prior to tip-off tomorrow night. That's just my gut, knowing this team and the way things are handled. Then, you know, he'll be a game time decision or questionable, and then we'll find out.
God, some things they just never seem to change.
He ended the game on the court, so he should be fine theoretically.
Mm. We'll see.
Right?
Here we go.
Right, Bob? Right?
Yeah.
Bob, I'm coming to you to talk to you.
I don't know, Jamie. What I do know is at Panera, dinner is hot and ready to serve. Bring home Panera's cheesy flatbread pizzas, toasty sandwiches, or creamy mac and cheese with delivery or pickup. Availability and pricing may vary. Well, Jamie, I'm going to bring up a bright spot.
Wow, you found one last night?
Not really, but if I spin it correctly, it might sound like a bright spot.
I wish you the best of luck.
And that is what I am going to attempt to do.
Good luck.
97.5 The Fanatic, this is the John Kincaid Show.
This weekend, I was hanging out at a party with a couple friends, and one of my friends, Andy, came up to me and was asking about BetMGM. The king of sports books. You guys have heard me talk about him, and Andy's a huge fan of parlay. So I said, dude, you gotta hop on BetMGM because this website and this, they're the place to go if you want to hop on parlays. All playoff long during the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs, they've been offering parlay boosts for you out there. So if you make a parlay of three legs or more, you get a boost. They're trying to give you also free money to start out with. So this is what you do. Hop on, sign up, and register at BetMGM.com or the BetMGM app. Enter code PatEgan100 if you want to win $100 in free bets. The way to do that, place $1 on tonight's Phillies or Dodgers game. If either team hits a home run in the game, you're going to end up winning $100 in free bets regardless of your bet's outcome. But they have all the sports. It's not just baseball. They have basketball. Trust me on that because I lost big last night. But they have hockey as well. They have the football futures. They have it all. But this is the place to go if you love parlays. Sign up today. Use code PatEgan100. You'll win $100 in free bets when you bet just $1 on the Phillies or Dodgers tonight. Either team hits a home run. Boom, you win. It's a new customer offer. Paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You have to be 21 years or older. Pennsylvania only. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, help is available. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. BetMGM Sports in partnership with Hollywood Casino Morgantown.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
John Kincaid Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. John is on vacation. Bob Cooney, Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, and the admirable, that's all I can come up with, Coach Eric Camille here. We're trying to get it done today.
All right, let's hear what you got.
No, I changed.
No. You promised positivity.
So I swear to God, I was sitting in here by myself while you schmagalins were doing other things. And I went to NFL refereeing and I said, upon further review, I really don't have a bright spot.
What were you even going to attempt?
All right, so here we go.
I want to hear the attempt. At least try and sell me on it.
Yeah, all right.
All right, this is a reach. Here, I'll put the legal preface on this. You don't actually believe this anymore, but if you were going to positive spin it, it would be...
All right, if you want a bright spot, maybe here it is. So... The Atlanta Hawks come in here in game one, and for the first 32 minutes of the game, it wasn't just the first half, which was 24 minutes. It was 32 minutes. The Sixers, to me, were absolutely unrecognizable. I didn't know who that team was. I didn't know what happened to the team that got the number one seed throughout the regular season. I hadn't seen them perform that poorly for 32 straight minutes at any point during the season. They turned the ball over 17 times in three quarters of play. As I said, unrecognizable basketball. Last night, they go to Atlanta in a chance to go up 3-1. They're up 13 points at the half. All of a sudden, here comes the unrecognizable team again. Second half, they look horrible. They score a total of 38 points. Joel Embiid goes 0-for-12 in the second half. And yet, Atlanta was only able to win the game by 3 points. Twice, five quarters out of the 16 that have been played, the Sixers have been unrecognizable, and yet Atlanta only has a 7-point advantage. I was going to say that's a reason to be happy, but now the Sixers have been unrecognizable in five of the 16 quarters they've played.
But haven't most teams?
No. I mean,
outside of the Suns.
Not if you're a number one seed. No, that can't happen.
Well, Use your common sense.
According to most of the media and the coverage of the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets are the real one seed. And they've played some bad basketball.
They lost their second best player.
Just last game at halftime. I mean, they were fine before
Well, they've
the game
lost
before
their
that.
Best player. They don't have their best player.
Their best player is Kevin Durant.
All right, their second best player is James Harden. He hasn't been there at all.
Okay, but they scored 87 points even when Kyrie is in there. Like, Durant and Kyrie are better than Tobias and Joe as a whole.
This team has been unrecognizable in five of the 16 quarters they've played. So wait, real quick, let me take out the eraser. I'm not doing the happy thing if you want a bright spot, because no, it's almost a third of the time they've played in this series against the Atlanta Hawks. The Sixers have been unrecognizable.
I wish their bad was a little better, but I don't think it's uncommon for a team to have five quarters out of 16 or 17 that are bad. I mean, it's a league of runs, right? I mean, you're not going to look stellar every quarter of every playoff series. So to me,
I'm not saying stellar.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wish their bad was a little better, because when they're bad right now, they're atrocious. But if you were to tell me that the Hawks outplayed five of 16 quarters, I would go, okay, cool, the Sixers win the series.
Look, if it was just winning quarters, okay. We're talking about 17 turnovers in three quarters, getting behind by 26 points. We're talking in the first game. We're talking about Joel Embiid going 0-for-12 in a half. Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons combining for two shots in a fourth quarter. That's unrecognizable to me. That's horrific. You can't be horrific for almost a third of a series if you're a number one seed. I don't care who you're playing.
I hear you. And their bad just needs to get better, but they're going to have their bad times.
And the number one seed in the West is not at a two apiece, too. So
yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think that's about right. Like, if you told me the better team loses five of 16 quarters, I would take that deal most times. You know what I mean?
I think it's really trendy right now to say, oh, well, championship teams don't do this, which I think is a myth, because I think if you look back at championship teams, they're going to falter at times. They're going to have a bad run during a game. I mean, the problem with the Sixers is you can afford to have one bad quarter. They had a bad half. They scored 62 points in the first half. They scored, 38 in the second? Like, you can't do that.
Well, that's what scares me. you're a number one seed. You're one of the best teams in the NBA. I understand you're not going to play every quarter great or even well sometimes. But to this disparity, to go from up 13 total domination to your best player doesn't score and shoots 0 for 12, and your second best player, your playmaker, takes one shot, and a guy that's supposed to be your second scorer in Tobias Harris.
Oh, I'm not a
takes two.
Okay with it. I'm just saying, like, no team is going to look dominant all the time.
No, I don't think so either.
And I think Tobias and Ben were on milk cartons in the fourth quarter last night. That's inexcusable. The fact that the two of them combined for two field goal attempts in the fourth quarter of a game where your superstar was going 0 for 12 in the second half, it's literally insane. And it makes me mad, but I think they're different things. Like, the Sixers are going to have their lulls. That's just reality.
Oh, the lull can't
their
be
lulls
that bad
are
to
really
me.
Bad, though, to your point.
But to look at the Western Conference, I mean, the number one seed out there got smacked by 26 and then lost by 12. Like, we look like it, like, oh, this is only us. You can't win a championship. Like, look at the West. Okay, yes, what the Phoenix Suns are doing is incredible. They beat up on a Lakers team that had no Anthony Davis and were coming off of a long run in the bubble. And then they beat up on a Denver team that was missing Jamal Murray. So, yes, they're the outlier. But other than that, I mean, the series are, if you look around the NBA, they're close series. I mean, so if this was just the Sixers, they were the only number ones. Well, they're one of two. But because the Utah Jazz are struggling, too, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
To your point, how bad their bad is infuriating. And
this
12 turnovers and a half in game one is inexcusable. Last night, that fourth quarter, with nobody else stepping up to bail Joel Embiid out, inexcusable. But I think they'll be fine tomorrow. I really do.
Billy Mumphrey was a cockeyed optimist.
I don't think he's a cockeyed optimist.
When you do something in playoff series that you haven't done during the regular season, and I mean, if Furkan Korkmaz comes out and scores 23 a game, something that he never did in the regular season, I would say, wow, that's not going to last. But when out of five quarters that they've played horrendous basketball, worse basketball than I saw them play all season long, in five out of 15 quarters in the playoffs, to me, it's a huge concern.
You might be right. I mean, we'll see Wednesday night. I think everything hangs on the status of Embiid. It really does, and that's, you know, you've ripped me in the past for how I watched Joel Embiid play, and
I don't rip you. No,
well,
rip
in that
you.
I'm a nervous
offensive.
Nelly. I'm a nervous
I think
Nelly.
You're a baby, but I didn't rip you.
Well, whatever. You point out my nervousness and how I watch Joel Embiid play, but it's because without him, this is all for naught.
Yes,
like they don't even have a chance at success if Joel Embiid isn't Joel Embiid. And I'm not saying it has to be 40 and 20 every night, but he can't be what he was last night, and that's 0 for 12 and a half.
They don't have no chance. They don't have a chance if they play those five quarters of basketball.
No, versus anybody. The Cleveland Cavaliers would beat them if they played that bad.
And they didn't do that during the regular season. That's why it's so maddening to me. I just don't get it.
So Kirk, it's going to be okay, Bob. It's okay. Not your fault.
Kirk on the cell. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Kirk?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. In Philly now, but I live in Los Angeles. I'm a big Clipper fan. I have seen this show before. The Sixers last night looked like a carbon copy of my Clippers blowing a 3-1 lead last season.
And what do those two teams have in common, Kirk?
Exactly. Doc Rivers, Sam Cassell. The man, he's a good coach, but he just doesn't make the adjustments. That's always been the knock against Doc Rivers, and it proved last night. Like you were saying, draw up a play for Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
Get the guy involved. Get him going. How many times do you hear, oh, once you see a ball go through the hoop, you know, it gets a player going, even if it's a foul shot.
Hey, Kirk, while I agree with you that Doc should have done that, don't you put the majority of that on Tobias to recognize it in-game and maybe call it out himself, maybe act like a max player there and take the bull by the horns?
Well, yes, look, you know, those guys are on the floor. They're playing. But, you know, at the same time, it like you guys said before, it comes from the top. And sometimes the coach has to jumpstart a player, get him going.
Sure.
For whatever reason, if he sees this deer in headlights reaction going on. Clippers, you know, three times in those last three games, they were up by double digits in each game, and they blew it. And I certainly hope this doesn't happen to the Sixers this year. But what I saw last night, I just said, here we go again.
Well, Kirk, thanks for the call. I hope that's not the situation. I don't know how much. Well, I mean, that is infuriating. It is. Tobias is playing the fourth quarter. And Ben, too. Like, but Tobias has an offensive game where he can beat somebody one-on-one, whereas Ben doesn't unless he's really getting to the rim, which is easier to defend late in the game. So I look more to Tobias there than I do to blame because I expect it from Tobias. I don't necessarily expect it from Ben.
Yeah. The way Ben Simmons fades away irks me to no end.
I mean, you had to pull him out of the game in clutch moments last night.
That's horrible.
What other max player can you say that about in the
None.
League?
None. Look, my thing is, when things are going bad, Pat, and I don't know if you agree with this, when things are going bad, put pressure on the defense. How do you put pressure on the defense? Ben Simmons, or Joel Embiid wasn't getting it done. Ben Simmons needs to look to create. Like, at some point, he needs to get the ball out of the basket and just run down the floor and get to the basket the way he can. And, yeah, he'll get fouled. Well, he's going to have to overcome that. The Ben Simmons factor in the fourth quarter, it's a real thing now. Yeah, Doc Rivers approached it last night by benching him.
I just worry, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, I worry that it's so mental with him at this point with the free throws that it's just going to follow him all postseason. And it's in his head now. Where you guys talked about how if he just hits the first two, he's fine and he's aggressive. But when he misses that first one, it's a snowball effect with him. And then afterwards, I mean, look, he does so many things well on a basketball court. We've outlined those.
Sure, and we don't need to have this conversation
To ignore the fact that they needed either him or Tobias to step up, neither of them did. Jamie, you're right. You don't really expect Ben to. You expect Tobias too, because he's kind of steady Eddie there. But the fact that combined they took two shots, they missed them both. I mean, that's just inexcusable. That's inexcusable. That entire offense looked lost all because Joel Embiid was off. And that's probably the most troubling thing to me, is if he's off, nobody takes the bull by the horns. Nobody takes the game over. You have three max players and no one decides, all right, he's not having it tonight, I'll do it. Like, someone's got to man up.
Atlanta did it without when Trae Young was shooting 8 for 26 last night. They had other guys except John Collins especially. I mean, it is ridiculous that we're scratching our heads today why Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons combined for two shots in the fourth quarter. Two shots. When your star was a shell of himself last night. And I find myself getting more angry as the show's going on. I came in and was the calm one, and you guys were all angry, and now you've calmed down and my anger's up.
You came in skipping in this morning. I wonder, so do you remember the game against Washington where everything Tobias put up was blocked? I mean, he must have gotten at least five or six shots blocked at the rim, and it was so noticeable because it's not a Tobias Harris game. I wonder if that block by John Collins negatively affected him, where he just, all right, I'm not going to do it. I'm diving in. I'm Dr. Filling this and diving in and really just like reaching for an excuse at this point. But, he's coming off a series where in Washington where he played great, but that one game, everything was blocked. And then he tries to drive to the rim and it gets rejected in a key moment there. And then he really didn't shoot again for the rest of the game.
And sometimes that stuff's hard to come back from. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know how you can allow yourself to be taken away from a game as much as he was last night in the fourth quarter. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just,
even if you're forcing a couple of shots, you have to try to force at the least, issue.
Hey, look, go with the honorless style of play of Trae Young and at least try to get to the free throw line.
The honorless style. Oh, my God.
Oh, man, I got Atlanta fans in a tizzy on Twitter this morning.
You got Pat in a tizzy this morning. I mean, that's not easy to do. Pat is usually untizzyable.
I'm very calm and cool and collected after playoff losses.
I told, whatever.
Go ahead, say it.
No, say it. These Atlanta fans are big mad. They're up in their feelings, Pat.
They're feeling chesty,
and I think the Sixers are going to smack them back to reality tomorrow night.
Well, the 9 a.m. hour is brought to you by The Dumpster. Dumpster in a bag. Get yours today at Home Depot and Lowe's. For details, go to Bagster.com. Tomorrow night, Game 5, 76ers Hawks, 7:30 right here on The Fanatic. Devon Givens and I will be bringing you pregame, starting after the Mike Missanelli show, and we will take you right in to Sixers action. What are you laughing about?
Nothing.
Are you and Egan fighting behind my back?
But you want us to fight so bad.
Yeah,
and you know what? Me and him are going to team up, and we're going to fight you, Cooney. You want to fight? You got it.
All right.
Want to sit here and be an instigator? Is that your bag? Is that what you do? You're an instigator?
You want to fight? I'll fight. I don't care.
You want to throw down?
I don't care.
No problem beating your kidneys in. No problem.
Never buried a body before?
No comment.
What's wrong with you? Are you kidding me?
So how about Ben Simmons?
So yesterday it's announced Ben Simmons, unanimous selection, Jamie, on the first team all-defensive NBA team. Second team, you get Joel Embiid and Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah.
Out of the 10 best players playing defense in the NBA, three of them are on your 76ers.
It's pretty incredible. Especially for Matisse, a guy that, averages 18 minutes a year, roughly, to make an all-NBA defensive second team.
That's respect.
That is the utmost respect. To have an impact that he has on games defensively in 18 minutes is insane. I mean, you saw it last night. Anytime he was on Trae Young, Trae really can't get by him. I mean, his length and quickness and style of defense is just... It's like few people I've ever seen in a Sixers uniform. It's really impressive. It's a great thing for a second year player who was kind of lost in the rotation in the first half of the season,
right,
to have that kind of impact, and to have Joel and Ben also recognized is really, really incredible to have three of the 10 best defenders in the NBA.
So Joel and Ben have the reputation, and rightfully so. They've been in the league a few years. Everybody
sure
knows how good they are defensively.
Nobody knows Matisse Thybulle outside Philadelphia.
Well, it's funny because sports writers are the ones that cover beats, are the ones that vote on this. So for some of the guys throughout the country that only see him 2-3 times a year, and as you said, for about 18 minutes a game,
yeah,
imagine the impression.
He jumped down that much.
Imagine the impression he left on them. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
So I think Devon and I were on air last night when it was announced. That's a really, really good thing.
Yeah.
And it shows you the identity of this team moving forward. Three younger guys. Yes, Embiid and Simmons are veterans, but younger guys still. This is the future of this team. It's on the defensive end of the floor.
Oh, not even the future. It's right now.
If
this team's going to win a title, it's going to be on the backs of their defense. The happiest person in Philadelphia last night, outside of Matisse Thybulle pregame, Matisse Thybulle's agent, because he just heard the cash register going, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Elle in North Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's happening, Elle?
Hey, good morning, guys. In the spirit of instigation, I want to shout out Pat Egan for putting Jamie, not my baby, in his place. Gotta love it. First thing. Second thing.
No problem.
As far as I think we're talking about Dwight Howard, Matisse, and everybody else because of the fact, because of the fact that our top three players pretty much put a donut up in the fourth quarter. Now, as far as is it going to affect us long term? Yes and no. No, because I don't think Embiid is going to go 0-for-12 in the fourth quarter moving forward. That's not going to happen. And Joel Embiid is going to be Joel Embiid. So most nights we're going to be cool, but the nights we aren't, I feel like it exposed something about this team, and I've been saying it for a long time, that we don't really have a number two. We really have two number threes. Tobias, he's a good scorer, but he's not really a dynamic scorer that can just take the ball and you just throw him on one side of the court and he's just going to break down his guy and he's just a bucket. That's not him. Ben, we already know he's just not an aggressive. He's more a Draymond Green type than a Klay Thompson type. So we really don't have that second guy, and I think that's really what is exposed. And I think long term against the better teams, that's what's going to affect us rather than just Doc not making
good rotations for guys really that we really shouldn't be depending on in the playoffs. You shouldn't be depending on your 6, 7, 8 guys in the playoffs.
No, you should be depending on Tobias Harris, to your point. Yeah.
I think so.
And he's exactly right. But look, Tobias had been great this year. He was almost in the 90-50-40 club. But like we talked about all year, he disappeared last year in the Mickey Mouse bubble. And I don't think one game is a fair portrayal of his entire playoffs. But last night, he was needed in a large, large way, and he was nowhere to be found. And whether that's on him or on Doc or on whoever's feeding Joel the ball every time, somebody had to recognize it and make a change last night, and nobody did. And that's the most concerning thing carrying over to Game 5 for me, but I still think they're fine.
Yeah, if Tobias Harris didn't prove this year that he's a capable number two scorer, then we were watching weird basketball because it seemed like he did.
But you need to do it in the playoffs.
Oh, there's no question.
And he has up until last night, but that was a big quarter for Tobias and how fans are going to remember him this offseason.
Yeah.
If they, God forbid, if they end up losing this series, I mean, you're going to look back at that fourth quarter of last night and go, that was it. That was the series.
This segment is brought to you by Spring Garden Lending, real estate developers. Bob Marino's at Spring Garden Lending, specializing in bridge and permanent loans to acquire, rehab, construct, and refinance investment properties. Spring Garden Lending, faster than a bank, less expensive than hard money lenders. All right, Jamie, we talked a lot about some disappointments from last night, and there was plenty of them. But there's one that we really haven't hit on that you're going to get to coming up in the next segment. This is 97.5 The Fanatic, John Kincaid Show. Time at The Fanatic is 9:21.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Respectable Roofing. Respect for our customers, respect for personalized service, and respect for your budget. Respectable Roofing, where respect matters. All right, people out there, you're getting on my coworkers' nerves, and it's starting to affect me. And when that happens, I need to say something.
Uh-oh, what's going on?
So Coach is screaming out in the hallway that some dude, what is it? Truth and wisdom. Truth and Wisdom is trying to start a fight with them, presenting unfacts, Coach, saying that we haven't criticized the Sixers today.
What? Boy, that escalated quickly.
We have a list of 17 things that we've criticized the Sixers about. I jokingly tried to bring up a bright spot, but I quickly realized that that's not even there. So, I don't know. If guys want to fight you, Coach, on things that they think is factual, then that's a good fight to have. But if they don't bring facts to the table, I say you keep your hands in your pocket and you don't throw fists.
I actually recorded Coach in the hallway during the break because he was so angry, yelling about this random guy on YouTube.
You want a piece of me? You got it!
That was Coach.
God, I love
that. Let me just tell you something about the chat room.
All right.
I, on a normal day, I have a pretty itchy trigger finger. And I if somebody comes at us with ridiculous comments or goes personal on any of you guys, that's out of bounds. You can talk sports, you can debate stuff all you want. It's fine. When you start going personal, that's where I have an issue today. And today, I let a lot of people on this chat board, because everybody's frustrated, I let them go for a while. And we have a few on here that that took advantage of that. I gave them an inch, they took a foot, and yeah, so we're, I'm having
you okay?
Yeah.
You are? You sure?
Does it make you feel like a man?
No, I'm just going to eat some Magic Spoon and I'll be okay.
So, besides this Truth and Wisdom dude, what is there someone else on there that gets on under your skin, or?
Yeah, there are a few.
Are most of the guys pretty cool?
Yeah, most of the guys. The chat room is awesome.
Is Mopar still on there?
What's Mopar doing?
Mopar's here, yeah.
What do you say, Mo?
Yeah, most of the guys on the chat room are awesome. It's one big big community, one big family and everything, and it's great. There's just a few you know, there's
always bad seeds, Coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we appreciate all of them listening, and yeah, our takes or our feelings. Natural
takes.
Yeah.
This is hot take radio.
I sucked you. Last night. I don't know how much, you know, we dove into all of their suckiness and how pissed off we all were when we got here today. I don't know.
I think I've said unexcusable about 18 times today.
I called them unrecognizable in the second half. It was horrible. And then after your little outburst, I go to Jamie, and he's in a Twitter fight with all of Atlanta.
Oh my God, these Atlanta nerds!
All of Atlanta is coming at Jamie.
The reason I recognize there's like four verified sports radio guys, one girl from Atlanta coming at me today, as if they're defending, they're paid to defend Trae Young's honor. It's not that hard. If Joel Embiid pulled the crap, and look, he falls, yada yada yada. If he pulled that crap play that Trae Young pulled last night on that three-point attempt, I would call him out for it. That's a garbage style of basketball, and there's a reason the NBA is instilling a new rule next year to prevent it from happening. It's horrible for the product. Nobody wins when you do that crap.
Can I just give you can I give you a tip real quick, Jame? So last night, as I said, you know, I had something going on, so I had to DVR the second half, and I got home, and I was peacocking a little bit in the first half. All right, I was chesty. I was throwing out some Twitter videos, getting some laughs, some chuckles. Second half didn't go my way. I completely ignored everything on Twitter. I just skipped. I went, you know, press the button. It goes right to the top.
Well, this is happening to me this morning.
Well, I understand that. So what you need to do is you need to mute this conversation.
I don't take it personally.
You can't quit it.
I kind of find it funny. That they're, you know, telling me I'm up in my feelings, yet they're the ones crying online. It's fine. Trae Young is not going to take you out on a nice steak dinner, dude. Like, relax.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That's Jamie on Twitter.
He's not going to buy you a nice seafood meal for defending his honor
online.
Well,
no, but that's unfair, Jamie, because now you're just talking out of your ass about stuff you don't know. You have no idea what Trae Young will buy these verified people or not.
That's true. He might be taking them all out for a nice end of the year.
You remember
meal.
When Amir Johnson bought you a hot dog? You remember those moments?
Coach?
Yeah, let me just go back to the chat. If you haven't had the chance to sign on to our Fanatic YouTube channel, do it. Not only can you see everybody in
but
here,
you can get blocked by Coach.
But the chat is awesome. I mean, you have to see the chat. I mean, from 6 o'clock, actually before 6 o'clock till 10 o'clock, we're constantly with this awesome chat. And most of the guys are awesome. I love it.
Who's getting the most heat today out of all of us?
Jamie, by far.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, am I getting called an optimist for some reason? I've been negative all day.
Yeah, no, it's...
Would people just hear what they want to hear?
Yeah, it's...
That's what led to Billy Mumfrey's downfall. Yeah.
I mean, have I done a sufficient job of calling out Ben and Tobias Harris and Doc Rivers today, Bob? You've been sitting with me for 4 hours.
You have.
So, was there any optimism to what I said other than... The Sixers are going to have lulls like most teams do?
Yeah, but...
Where's my positive spin from today? You tell me.
Why are you getting on me?
Well, what the hell are people hearing?
Because we all
talk
know that
to
Bob,
coach. He's
Bob
the one
is
that
actually
brought it up.
Bob's truth and wisdom.
I'm just trying to get out of here, 10 o'clock.
You're truth and wisdom, you coward.
You're hiding behind the YouTube channel.
And Anthony's going to come storming in the door calling me Sunshine Mary. I haven't said one positive thing all day. The hell is people here? Get the wax out of your ears.
It's not true for 11 minutes there. We were at Patty Positivity and Jamie Jimbo.
Jamie's Positivity is sponsored by Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. Impaired driving crashes are 100% preventable. Be safe. Designate a sober driver. Don't drive impaired. Be safe, PA. Learn more at penn.gov/safety. Paid for with Pennsylvania tax payer dollars.
Didn't I tell you to call me Big Earn?
Your face is getting red. I think you're getting legitimately upset at this.
There's no red in my face right now. Don't lie to the people, Bob.
It's tell there's plexiglass between us.
Stupid plexiglass. Get it out of here, Coach.
Jamie asked Coach during a break. He says, can we get this plexiglass out of here? And Coach took it personally. Like, what the hell do you want me to do? Is that a rhetorical question? And just started yelling. I'm telling you, emotions are running high here
we're
today.
We're having fun, aren't we, folks?
Yeah.
Well, the worst part is you got Bob in there instigating all of us.
The worst part is Bob?
Coming in peacocking like, I don't know why you guys are so upset. Oh, happy, happy, happy. That's what you sounded like this morning.
You're a bit of an instigator.
Okay. You're instigator. You know what you are?
Here's
you're
what
Don
an
King.
Ass you are,
you're
real
Don
quick.
King. You instigate.
I walk in this morning and say hello, or you walk in late this morning, and I say hello to you, and you don't respond.
That's not true at all.
Because you can't, because you're so upset about a
not
Sixers
true at all.
Loss.
Not true at all.
That's
I said
over
hi.
The top.
I said hi.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you came in, and you sat right there. I said, hi, Pat, but
said,
we were
hey.
In the middle. Nope.
Well, it's because he was late, and he had to be quiet coming
yeah.
in. Boom.
I was
oh,
late.
Oh, so now you're admitting you were quiet.
No, I'm admitting
why
that
were
I was
you late.
I was late because I was stuck behind a Subaru hatchback who
hey.
Was going 25 and 25.
Those are nice cars.
Oh, I can't stand them.
All right. Who? Me
Subaru,
or the hatchback?
No. Hatchback drivers live to go 25 and 25. They live for it. Drives me nuts. So when you're running
now
late
we're
for
clumping
work,
in hatchback drivers.
This is what a Sixers loss has done. We're just like compiling everything, all of our complaints.
And you know
one.
What else is worse? And then these Atlanta nerds getting on me? These Oklahoma nerds coming to Trae Young's honor. Get a life. I guess there's not much going on in Oklahoma.
Mute this notification. It's a beautiful button, Jamie. That's all I'm saying.
All right, so among the complaints that Sunshine Jamie is throwing out there today.
And then the Phillies lost.
Here, we're not allowed to talk about
somebody's
them,
calling me about my car warranty now. Damn it.
Answer it. I love answering those calls.
This show's completely
no,
off
no,
the rails.
No, don't answer
it's
that.
It's truth and wisdom.
Yeah, way to go. All right, so, Jamie, one of the complaints that we really haven't brought up today, but it is kind of a head scratcher.
I don't know if this is on me or on the player.
I blame you.
Well, when I say me, I mean my expectations. And I don't know if they were fair or you tell me. You're usually a right down the middle fair judge as you're judging Anthony and Mide's bet right now. George Hill. I expected more. And he looks passive when he's on the floor. He looks, I've used the word in the past like 2 weeks, kind of lost in his role. I think he's contributing with some decent veteran team defense, but you're really not getting anything else. Like, I took his over 4.5 points last night.
Yeah.
You would think a guy like George Hill, who's been through the battles, who's been playoff tested, who is a good shooter, could get you 5 or 6 points.
You would think.
He looks lost, and I don't know if it's on me for expecting too much or if you're seeing the same thing, which is just an overall passiveness and inability to really be a factor right now. And it's kind of concerning to me because I thought George Hill was going to be a huge role on this team.
I wanted him to start last night simply because for a couple of things. The veteran stuff that he provides, the outside shooting, similar to Danny Green. But it appears that something's up. Because they're not using him nearly as much as they thought, as we thought they would when
yeah.
they got him. Because
it's a guy that can shoot. It's a guy that can create a shot off a dribble. It's a guy that can get to the rim occasionally. And we're seeing, like, none of it.
Yeah, my guess is that thumb didn't heal as properly as they
think
thought,
that's what
maybe.
It
has to be something. Because you're right. He is being very passive.
Yeah, like,
and
I've seen a lot of standing around in general, at least last night in the second half. And George is kind of that to me as well. Like, he doesn't know exactly. Their off-ball movement last night was horrible in the second half.
It wasn't. It was so good in game three.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. And it started out good in the first half with Ben crashing down anytime Embiid was getting doubled or tripled on the wing. And then it just went by the wayside in the second half. I'm really interested in your notes on your rewatch today because I'm sure you'll nerd out and rewatch it today as you
yeah.
always do. You know, pay attention to George Hill in the second half and pay attention to the bias off-ball for me. Because I thought both those guys were passive and, frankly, quite strange.
Yeah, Hill suffered the injury in February. It seems like either late March, February, and it's a tendon problem in the thumb of his shooting hand. So it's probably not something that you overcome this quickly if it was a normal season. He came back from it. Whether he got his legs under him or not, I don't know. There's something there. I mean, Doc Rivers not using him to the capabilities that we thought he was going to use them. There's been, we have to be honest, there's been nothing from George Hill.
Nothing. So is there hope it can turn around? Like you would think a veteran should be able to turn it around. Right now I feel like there's not much hope in terms of getting that 8 to 12 points here and there from him.
The fact that you're only putting him out 10, 12, 13 minutes a game, if you're Doc Rivers, that speaks volumes to me. I thought it was a no-brainer when Danny Green got hurt that, oh, there it is. You know, that's exactly the reason you got a George Hill. You throw him in there and you're good to go. And your rotations as far as subs coming off the bench stay the same. But that hasn't even been a thought, it appears. He's getting, to me, it seems like he's getting put out there for the sake of putting him out there because he's got to give somebody a rest.
It seems like Doc is trying to give guys the rope to hang themselves with, like meaning that, oh, well, he'll play his way out of it. Joel Embiid last night in the second half, he'll play his way out of it. The first half with Danny Green on Trey, he'll play his way out of it. Like, it seems like he's doing that, and it's not working. Like,
no.
Guys aren't playing their way out of it.
Yeah, he
spots.
And he also still looks rusty. I mean, he's throwing passes where people aren't.
Yeah, it's a weird addition to the team. And not weird in what we thought was his fit. We thought his fit was going to be perfect, but he's not meeting the expectations that I think a lot of people had.
No, he hasn't been getting it done.
I mean, Daryl Morey talked glowingly about him as soon as they got him. Like,
we all loved it.
Yeah, George Hill's a guy I've wanted on my team for years.
Yeah.
It's a direct quote, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's gone. Maybe it's the injury would certainly make sense that the thumb's bothering him, but he needs to play a more aggressive style of ball because he's one of the few guys I trust, and I say trust now in air quotes, on that second unit.
Yeah, I thought putting him in the starting lineup not only because of the reasons I stated, but also because it might help him get going a little bit. You find some open shots when you're on a floor with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. You find yourself getting a ball in a corner. You know, there's shots to be had there that you have to take.
And maybe get Seth Curry involved when he's your best player.
Yeah, that would help too. Spider in South Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Spider, what's happening?
Not much. Good morning. How y'all feeling, man?
What's up, Spider?
Oh, I'm good. Listen, man. Ben Simmons got to bring it more, man. I don't understand what he was doing last night. I really don't. Like, that was like, man, I don't even have no words for that, man. Most of the blame, for real, I don't, man. I'm just tired.
I hear you. I hear you.
People saying that, you know, Ben had a bad game. I mean, JoJo had a bad game. Listen, 17-21-4, that's good by me from a guy that's been giving it all series and plus. Tobias, he gave up what his average is. I know he should have been a little bit more aggressive in the fourth quarter, but he gave up what his average is, about 20 to 25 points. It's our supermax point guard that needs to get his act together. And Bob, I don't know if you remember me saying this last night, them guys like they're recovering from a long weekend. They like to recover from a long weekend. I don't know if they was out having too much fun.
Yeah, I hope not, Spider. I hope that's not the case, buddy. Appreciate your call.
I can't assume that's the case.
Look, leaders take care of a team, and Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, it's on them. Look, we're down here for business. You don't mess around. I'm not even going to entertain that thought. I have no clue whether they were out or not. No. I've been around teams.
I do want those lemon pepper wings, though. Ever since
Lou Williams. And where do you get them, Jamie?
What is it, Magic City?
Yeah.
Ever since Lou Williams broke the bubble for these lemon pepper wings, I've been dying to try them.
Yeah, you're weird when it comes to that stuff.
If they're good enough to break the bubble, and maybe the ladies were good enough to break the bubble, not the wings, but the wings are a nice side piece there. I got to try these wings.
Yeah. So your annoyance with the Atlanta fans last night?
No, it's they're annoyed with me. I don't have any.
No.
The courtside idiots that wouldn't sit down.
Yeah, I was trying, like, as you said it, I didn't really respond because I was trying to think, wait, he's not really mad at people for standing up and cheering, but you are?
The courtside, you don't stand all game. They were standing for, like, an entire quarter. Think, like, if I'm in rows 2 through 6 or 8 there, I'm going, yo, down in front. You're courtside. Sit down.
It's an exciting game. You stand up and cheer.
Let the boy watch.
Oh, wow, this isn't good.
Oh, man, not even a fist pound. It looks like dead man walking right now.
Wow.
Oh, no.
This is bringing me down worse than anything else that has gone on today.
Anthony Gargano
just walked in studio, and usually, as you guys see on YouTube, he fist pumps, he pounds, he shakes, he rattles, he rolls us. And today, he walks in with head bowed and eyes closed.
What's up?
Come on, Ant. Pull us out of this.
Good luck.
This has a long-lasting effect?
What is Tobias doing? Dude.
He's number 2 on my list.
Dude, he's number 1 on my list. Listen, Ben also needs to take more than one shot for sure. Simmons, but Tobias, that's your job.
Yeah,
your job offensively is to score,
is to be Robin right now to Joel's back.
And you're right. Doc's got to draw up a play for you. You can't just let things go, Bobby. I hear you, and you're right on. Coaches won't let the players do that, but come on now, you got, dude. You got to take advantage. You know the big guy. The big guy didn't have it.
Yeah.
The big guy carries you every game.
Yeah.
You got to allow for a night when the big man doesn't have it.
Yeah.
So you got to come in, and you're Tobias Harris. You're going to score, man. You're Ben Simmons. You got to score. You got to attack the rim. And Pat was right on. I had the same notes that Pat did. Where with that one stretch early in the fourth quarter, that was the same stretch where they blew them out in game three. Same exact stretch, beginning of the fourth quarter.
Atlanta was horrible shooting last night.
Horrible.
They were 36% from the field. The fact they won that game is mind-boggling.
It's unbelievable. And it pisses me off because you just squandered the opportunity. Like, I believe they're going to win the series.
So do
right?
I. So do I.
I do. I think they're going to win Wednesday night, and that's that.
But it reminded me of game four in Toronto 2 years ago. You had an opportunity
but
to strangle
hold it.
But
you got to do something besides the big man. The big man can't always. He's going to have a night when he's like that. And he's, by the way, still had 21 boards. And he had a night like that. And you were within a couple of bunnies from winning the game.
Yeah. You didn't put enough pressure, in my opinion, on Atlanta defensively.
Nope.
So you attack. If I'm struggling, if my big man's struggling, what do? You attack.
Because
okay,
that's
the rest
how they
of us
score.
Attack.
That's how their offense goes. The Sixers offense doesn't go for threes. The Sixers offense goes in transition from turnovers they create. That's the basis of their offense.
At halftime, you had Kenny, Charles, and Shaq going, what defense is Atlanta playing here? And then to your point, the second half, it just disappeared, and it looked like Atlanta was playing okay defense, but it was because of the Sixers' lack of attacking and being aggressive.
Well, right, because all their offense is from, it all stems from their defensive play. That's how they get, you say it, Bob,
yeah.
That's their,
four
that's
turnovers
why,
last night.
Well, you said, dead on, I put Maxey in the starting lineup, and I go, smother him, because
Maxey or Thibel?
Thibel, what did I say, Matt?
That's okay.
Thibel in the starting lineup, and I smother him. And that defense that I get from Thibel is going to help me in transition.
I think your half court shrinks a lot if you put a non-shooter in
there. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
They're already tripling
Embiid. Because I'm going to shut them down defensively, and I'm going to force transition.
You did that last night.
You're going to force transition.
They had
By
four
the way,
turnovers.
Korkmaz can't start. He can't start.
You're putting Korkmaz in there because what does he do? He's an offensive player. Your offense hasn't struggled this series at all. You're averaging 123 points. I would have started George Hill because I think it's just a calming factor. I'm not looking for offense. You have enough offense. The Korkmaz thing I wasn't in total agreement with. I wonder
like
if
it.
He changes it tomorrow night.
I didn't like it. I like Thibault. The more I think about it, you made a good point.
Well, it was actually Mike's point yesterday that I was copying today, yeah.
No, I agree with him. I thought. Listen, I wanted Maxey because I think you can get Maxey off and he gives you a different dynamic. He only played 8 minutes, whatever, and he played well. I think the kid...
Offensively.
Yeah.
Defensively, he played like a rookie. I mean, that's the fear in starting a rookie this late.
I mean, you're playing Shake 20 minutes. He sucks defensively, so what does it matter? Korkmaz sucks defensively.
I mean, there's
so
a reason not many rookies play at this stage in the playoffs.
Listen, he actually will compete more than Korkmaz or Shake defensively.
Yeah, but Shake's got a better offensive game right now.
Is this longer lasting, Ant? Does last night concern you enough that you look further down the road?
I'm
not just saying this series.
I'm disappointed in this. I'm disappointed that you squandered the Brooklyn-Milwaukee war, right? The fact that they're in a war, you squandered that.
Mm-hmm.
You squandered it. Now you're in a war. You didn't need to be in a war. You're up 18 last night. You got to finish them off. And by the way, it all goes back to Doc. Come on, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, so many things to pick at. Can't wait to hear you and Andrew today.
Oh, I can wait.
I know, yeah. But you'll all get out. I'll say by like 11:30, you'll start feeling better.
No way.
No? All right, never mind. All right, what you can't do is don't strike out with boring sodas and plain old water. Bat 1,000 every time with Everfresh juices and juice drinks. Available in over 40 different flavors. Everfresh, good juices, four good times. You do have game five tomorrow night here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And before we get out of here, I have to remind you to remember to support life-saving cancer research. Join me and our generous partner, Window Nation, in making a donation to the American Association for Cancer Research today at 975thefanatic.com/AACR. Cancer research saves lives. Sixers will look to save their playoff lives tomorrow night. Join us for that, 97.5 The Fanatic. But join Anthony Gargano and Andrew Salchunas right now. The John Kincaid Show, Bob Cooney, Jamie Lynch, Pat Egan, Coach Eric Camille. We'll be back at you same time tomorrow. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.